Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Just so you know, in case before anybody sends emails, I know that the White Rose Society server is acting up. It collapsed, and then I started it up again. Hopefully, it'll catch up, and all will be good in short order. Here we are. A brand new month begins at the Horn. It is the first day of November, 2019. Special day for me because this would have been my father's 95th birthday. How about that? He's been gone from us for 13 years, but I think of him every day. Happy birthday, Dad. You are much missed. You know, the other night, I mentioned, oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the Front Porch. The link for Friday on the Front Porch, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, is up at headon.live. If you don't see it, refresh the page, and it'll be right there. If you'd like to participate in the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany Real-Time Multimedia Extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, well, just run on headon.live and click on chat room. If you've not already picked out a screen name and a password, well, there's never been a better time to pick one out. And jump right into the chat room. You'll be greeted by Anatole and Squeaky, early arrivers, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave, and his trusty assistant, pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Sparky says no sound here on headon.live. Should be. We're sending like mad. Brother Deacon Asa, could a Brother Deacon Asa help a brother out? Let me know if you see anything. We'll have an answer shortly. So, like I said, here we are at the first of the month. And, of course, the first of the month always brings Bruce's slash Shirley's Memorial Challenge. That means that on the first of the month, there's a $200 challenge. And if that $200 challenge is met, then everybody doubles their money. Greg got an early start on us yesterday. And thank you very kindly, Greg, for it. So this evening, to finish the challenge, there's only $100 to go. And thanks to Ralphs, and an anonymous contributor, and thanks to our buddy Gary, Laborman, out New Mexico way, for making the challenge possible and continuing it in Bruce's name and in Bruce's memory. Thank you indeed. This program always begins with thanks for the first day of the month. Our thanks go out to Renee in D.C., to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent, to Bob in North Carolina, to Lauren out in the far frozen wastes of Alberta, to Rusty in Northern Colorado, not far from Wyoming. Thank you to Joseph, and thank you very kindly to Shorty in L.A. Thank you very, very much indeed. So that means, you know, 10 at 10, whatever. If we raise another $100, we will have met the challenge for this evening. Thank you very, very kindly. Now, before we jump into the Friday on the Front Porch discussion, or the filibobster, I guess, before the Friday on the Front Porch discussion, a reminder, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that we hold forth in every Friday evening in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, well, like I said, just go over to head-on.live and click on the link there. However, there are people out there who cannot sort out Skype for any number of reasons. And for those folks, well, we have the stress line. The stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, THEHORN. And you can be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation that way, if you so choose. So that's a possibility. And I'm about to broach a topic that I don't, well, you know how I feel about it. But I've had several people in the Horn Family Community Congregation over the last few months tell me that I need to raise the regular evening fundraising goal. It is not something that I come to easily. Golly, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago that we got to where we are now. And I take people at their word. And so, but I'm not going to do it unilaterally. This is not some sort of dictatorial decision. You are the ones who keep this program going, month in and month out. And you get a say-so. Republicans, maggots, trolls, y'all can fuck right off and just keep fucking off until the sun burns out. But the members of this community definitely get a say. And let me tell you the thinking behind it. Part of why I'm bringing it up, I've generally resisted it for several months now, is this. It was tickled in my memory today. And I don't mean in a fun way. There were no feathers involved. But it popped into my consciousness today, and I decided to raise this this topic on this particular evening for a specific reason. And by way of explaining it, well, there is, of course, a story. In a way, it has to do with what's gone on for the last 3 months. In another way, it doesn't. But I saw a video today that was produced by Democratic senators who were drawing attention to the fact that open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act begins today. Thank you. Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve, jumping in and saying, I'm going to go ahead and second the motion for what it's worth. Thank you, Steve. But we'll get, I want to make sure that I lay out my reasoning in its entirety. So anyway, I watched this, well, I guess you'd call it a PSA. And curiously, there are 17 Democratic senators in it urging people to get signed up or re-upped or whatever it is with the Affordable Care Act. You'll hear a lot of voices. There's one voice you won't hear. I mean, there's more than 17 Democrats in the Senate, let's be clear. Elizabeth Warren isn't in it, I don't think. I don't think any of the presidential senators are in it. Dianne Feinstein isn't in it. Whoever the woman is that replaced Al Franken isn't in it. There's a bunch of folks who aren't in it. But let's check out the audio just the same. To get covered or change your coverage, sign up at healthcare.gov by December 15th.
Hi, I'm Peter Morley. I'm a patient advocate who lives with over 10 pre-existing conditions, and I'm a cancer survivor. I've testified in Congress about how access to affordable, quality health care has been a literal lifesaver for me, which is why I'm joining Senate Democrats to share an important message with you all.
Open enrollment is happening right now through December 15th.
You can go online to find the health care you need today.
If you need to sign up for a plan, renew your current one, or change your plan, now is the time.
Just to be clear, so far, that is Chuck Schumer, Patty Murray of Washington, why can't I? I had it on the tip of my tongue. From Ohio, Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown. I always remember Sherrod Brown because the first time that Flush Flimball, the oxymoron, heard of him, he pronounced his name Sherrod Brown and swore up and down that he was a black guy. And next up is next up is Sheldon Whitehouse from Rhode Island.
Visit healthcare.gov to find the right quality, affordable health insurance for you and your family.
Every single family in our country does.
This is the guy whose name I can't remember from Michigan, kind of a newbie.
Deserves quality, affordable health care, regardless of their income or
health. Oh, Senator Gary Peters. They conveniently put it up in the corner, but they fonted it in white against a white background, so that's why. But that's Gary Peters.
Health status.
Access to quality, affordable health care can make all the difference for patients like Peter Morley from my home state of New York.
Access to quality, affordable health care can make all the difference for children like Zoe from Seymour, Wisconsin.
For children.
That was Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. This is Senator Tom Udall from New Mexico.
From my home state of New Mexico.
For patients like Phyllis Solotoro from my home state of Maryland.
That's Ben Cardin. Now we're back to Patty Murray.
Patients like Lily from my home state of Washington.
Patients like Melita Christian from my home state of Oregon.
Ron Wyden.
Patients like Connor from my home state of Connecticut.
Richard Blumenthal.
Like 14-year-old Mallory Holloway.
That's Tom Carper of Delaware.
From my home state of Delaware.
For people like Elsie Hammer, an 8-year-old from my home state of Nevada.
That's Jackie Rosen.
For patients like the Corbin family from my home state of Pennsylvania.
That's Bob Casey. I mean, Jesus, really? They can get Bob Casey, but they can't get Joe Manchin? Because that's the... Okay, that's the punchline. Joe Manchin was busy having his hair did or something. He couldn't make it to the video, I guess.
For people like Rosie from my home state of New Hampshire.
Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. Mark Warner of Virginia.
For patients like Catherine from Virginia, who lives with type 1 diabetes.
Who survived aggressive breast cancer.
Who lives with cystic fibrosis.
Who lives with Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
By enrolling now, you can make sure you and your family have the care you need when you need it.
Maisie Hirono of Hawaii. We're back to Mark Warner again.
So please, don't delay.
Don't delay.
So don't delay. Visit healthcare.gov now.
Visit healthcare.gov now.
Healthcare.gov.
Now is the time.
Now is the time.
Now through December 15th.
Everybody, go out and get covered.
Seriously. What are you waiting for?
Get covered.
Get covered.
Get covered.
If you don't get covered, I won't be mad, but I will be disappointed.
And it's signed United States Senate Democrats. And like I said, no Joe Manchin. Because, gosh, nobody in West Virginia needs the Affordable Care Act. You know, for a guy who won his last Senate election convincing people in West Virginia that he was the better choice because he would continue to support the Affordable Care Act, whereas pill pushing Patty Morrissey didn't want to just push pills and he wanted to push people off their health care, I would have expected Joe to kind of jump at that. But Joe didn't. So here's the bottom line. Jack in Shreveport says, I've seen that guy Peter Morley on Twitter a bunch. I cannot say for sure what purchasing for-profit health insurance might be for me. If Robert in Australia is listening, once again, the blood will drain all out of his face when I say that it's measured in thousands and thousands of dollars. But I do know this much. I can't do it on what we're raising now. And I'm not going to, like I said, I'm not going to just arbitrarily change the fundraising goal. But we're going to take the month. And maybe we'll start, well, got to apply by December 15th. And usually what happens every year about this time when I do this is they tell me that I'm too poor for the ACA, but too damn rich for Medicaid. But I've learned something. I was just, Agnes and I were talking, you know, we're still apart for reasons that you already know. You know, it's not like the marriage is failing or anything, but it has to be this way for a while. We've been through a lot in 26 years of marriage. And I'm sorry, I haven't had any Adderall today or anything. I'm just a little sniffly. It went from 75 degrees yesterday to 32 degrees in the bedroom this morning when I woke up. So I've been a little, you know, sinusy. I'll try to mute for most of my Adderall snorts. I don't want to come across like Nitwit Nero. It's bad enough that Facebook continues to identify me as him every time somebody puts up a fucking post about him. Pardon the early F-bomb. So, anyway, what the two of us came to the conclusion is that we were kind of cruising right along through the summer, you know, June, July. Then came August. And from August to the present have been some three of the hardest months of our marriage that we have ever known. And I have realized in these 3 months, it becomes terrifying, and I hope it's not some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. But I've got to do a better job of taking care of my own well-being. Because, well, and it was Agnes who said it to me, if something happens to you, everything falls apart here. So I've got to try to figure out some way to get health care. And the only way that I can figure out how to do it is to bump up the fundraising goal. Now, another thing in the back of my mind is this jackass who used to write in years ago, claimed to be a progressive person, claimed to be a liberal, claimed to be a Democrat, claimed to be wealthy, bragged about it constantly. I guess that's supposed to impress people. It didn't impress me. He was always going on and on about how, you know, oh, I'm gonna give $1 billion to Coal River Mountain Watch. Shut the fuck up. Of course, he was big boots, big hat, no goddamn cattle. But he did say one thing that has stuck in my mind because he's a vicious prick. And the thing that he said is, you can't tax the horn community for your health care. And that's a lie. It's pure, unadulterated, 200-proof bullshit because there's no taxes here and there's no charges here. Everything that happens here happens for free, and everything that happens here to keep the thing going is strictly and entirely voluntary. We've never sent a bill and never will. But the bottom line is the only way that I can see that that I'm going to get health care is to be able to buy it. pure and simple. Something that'll provide some level of coverage. And so let's take the month of November. We'll just cruise through it as ordinary. And you tell me what you think. It's not hard to reach me. If y'all want to talk about it this evening on the front porch, that's cool too. And we'll sort it out from there. And that's the best way I know to go about it. And I thank you in advance for your input and your solicitude. So that's all there really is to that. But I wanted to put it out there for your consideration and your input. Now, as to other things, yeah. So there was that ad. And somehow or another, Joe Manchin couldn't bring himself to be in it. I'm Joe Manchin, and I want you to sign up for the ACA. Nope. Not Joe. Of course, not Joe. But Joe did find time to say something else. And boy, you want to get the hockey puck early. The story comes out of the Hill, so it's a little bit suspect. But I take them at their word on this one. Interviewed on Where Else? Fox News. Interviewed by Neil Cavuto. Well, Neil Cavuto put the question to him. If Bernie Sanders ended up the Democratic nominee, who would you vote for head-to-head against Donald Trump? Now, it is not unfair to think that Joe is at least marginally aware, to the extent that Joe is aware of anything except the coal industry, that Joe is aware of the myriad and manifest high crimes and misdemeanors, not to mention bribery, that Donald Trump has embroiled himself in during the time of his presidency. Well, if that's the case, and I have no reason to believe it is not, then Joe Manchin has made clear. Let me see if I can just call up the audio here. I don't even. Yuck. Because I don't want to get anything wrong. I want Joe to speak for himself, because after all, Joe's a Democrat. So let's check in.
The Bernie Sanders thing. Would you support his agenda?
Absolutely not. Bernie and I have had many conversations. I think that Bernie brings a lot to the table. It makes you think a little bit, kind of gets the blood going and stirring and everything, but it's not practical where I come from.
You know, oddly enough, I come from West Virginia more than Joe Manchin comes from West Virginia. My people were here being hillbillies, raising crops and butchering hogs and mining coal, while Joe's people were still cobbling shoes somewhere on the Italian peninsula. His family's kind of new to the place. Only been here 100 years or so. Maybe 120. Not quite the same as, you know, getting here in 1738, 1745. So when he talks about it's not good for where he comes from, he doesn't have much standing to talk about what anybody needs where he comes from. Because for starters, the fucker's a millionaire. And millionaires have no business inveighing on what's good for America. Because the only thing millionaires ever worry about is what's good for a millionaire. And, you know, he says Bernie makes you think a little bit. Well, a little bit is about as much as Joe is able to think. So we've got that going on.
Yes, the Bernie Sanders thing. Would you support his agenda?
Absolutely not. Bernie and I have had many conversations. I think that Bernie brings a lot to the table. It makes you think a little bit. Kind of gets the blood boiling and stirring.
Now, hold on. Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to have a hard time getting through this clip. I apologize. But this shit gets all over me like, oh, God. Goes through me like a dose of salt. Joe Manchin is he's a coal broker with his shit in a blind trust right now. But he knows who he is. Joe is of coal, by coal, and for coal. Even though coal is to reach for a Monty Python reference, coughing up blood on the porch, pining for the fjords. It's in a bad way. You know, Murray Energy just declared bankruptcy. It doesn't mean Murray Energy's going away. It just means that they're going to retool and be even meaner and more negligent in how they go about doing their business. Bob Murray fucked up Murray Energy so badly that he was removed as head of the company. He's still like chairman of the board. But he spent so much time running around being a 200-proof dickhead that, well, his own activities probably contributed to running his company into the ground. And I might remind Joe that, and look, I'm still where I've been since this latest round of presidential campaigning began. I am not endorsing any candidate. There are some candidates who have worn their welcome out with me, but I'm even loath to trash them. And by the way, the breaking news, of course, you probably already know, Beto O'Rourke bailed out today. And as loath as I am to say it, good. I like Beto. Seems like a decent guy. But this was not his race. And, well, he wasn't born for this. I guess there's some people out there who are weeping and wailing and sitting in sackcloth and ashes and gnashing their teeth at his exit from the race. But he was not going to be the nominee. More on that in a minute, because I saw some of the worst political punditry I've ever seen published at the Atlantic today. But, and by the way, Beto said, no, I'm not, and he's getting it right, because there are good candidates for Senate to run against John Cornholio already. M.J. Hager, for one. So, he says he's not going to run for Senate, and I'm going to take him at his word. And that actually comports with something that I've been saying for a while, namely, if I were Beto O'Rourke, I would sit back, and I would keep touring Texas as a non-candidate. I would try to get people to listen to me wherever I went. And in 2022, I would run for governor. Because for some reason or another, the country has a taste for Southern Democratic governors. And I like governors running for president because it means they've got real world experience. You know, even though the governor of Texas is kind of it's almost a figurehead position. It's almost like a ceremonial office, kind of like being the coin. So, you know, sorry about that, Beto, but I don't think we've heard the last of him. Ron and Raleigh asking, do you think Beto will throw his hat in the ring for governor of Texas? Wouldn't be surprised. It's not a decision that he has to make day after tomorrow. At least not as far as I can tell. Maybe I'm wrong about the timing. Maybe John Bridevo can tell us about that if he's around for the front porch. But back to what I was saying earlier, I voted for Bernie in the West Virginia primary back in May of 2016. About every Democrat I know did. And Bernie won all 55 counties in West Virginia. And to be fair, he did so with the help of no small number of maggots. Because everybody seems to, in saying, yeah, but Bernie won all 55 West Virginia counties. They seem to forget that Nitwit Nero showed up in Charleston and put on a miner's helmet and pumped his two stupid tiny little fists and said, I love coal. We're bringing coal back. Coal has collapsed spectacularly. Far, far more harm has been done to the coal industry in the almost 3 years that Nitwit Nero's been in the Oval Office than in the entire 8 years of the Obama presidency. But at the same time, it's far from over. Yeah, for instance, if you've been by my Twitter timeline, if you scroll back in that a ways, you'll see a video produced, I think, by Vice about my friend Junior Walk, who has become a master of drone photography and keeps an eye on these sites and turns in violation after violation after violation on these mountaintop removal nightmares that are still going on. If they shut down every underground coal mine in West Virginia, they'll keep doing mountaintop removal because it is so quick and profitable and dirty and easy. Requires hardly any employment, a lot of heavy machinery. There's a ton of debt, but everybody makes their money on the front end, and then the company goes bankrupt and fucks the workers out of their 401ks and whatnot. But Bernie won all 55 counties. And you know after these 3 years, that I'm not one of these people that sits around going, God damn, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, fucking DNC, Bernie would have won. But they did engage in some sleazy shit. Like the fact that they couldn't even let Bernie win West Virginia when it came convention time. That they had to monkey with the vote totals so that Hillary, with her superdelegates, would actually win West Virginia when she didn't. It wouldn't have made any difference to have just left Bernie's win of West Virginia the hell alone. But people like Joe couldn't bear to do that. Now, if you ask me, I think if we'd had, you know, some sort of, fly on the wall in the voting booth when Joe went to vote, I know he voted for Donald Trump. Because Joe's one of those Dantean ninth circle of hell betrayers. Joe would shiv his own sainted granny if he thought that there was some political value in it. the Democratic Party in West Virginia is largely moribund because he put all his cronies into the state party, and it is nothing but a it's nothing but a cult of personality for Joe now. But to say that Bernie is impractical, I don't know. What he's saying, and it was couched, and this is the thing that matters to me, it was couched in terms of Bernie himself, but what Joe is saying is that he loathes and detests and despises any sort of progressive policy that benefits anybody whose name isn't Manchin. And that's the way it's been with that disgusting family for generations. There is an old saying in this state that no one named Manchin has ever voted for another Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. The Manchin family was behind Democrats for Arch Moore, the single most crooked individual ever to sit in the governor's office in the state of West Virginia. The Manchin family was behind Democrats for Underwood, the second most decrepit Republican ever to sit in the governor's office. And, of course, in 2016, Joe went out and got his dear friend, Jim Justice, to run for governor of West Virginia as a Democrat, when Jim Justice had been a Republican all his miserable life. His miserable billionaire life. And, of course, as soon as he won the governor's race, or almost as soon as, I mean, he really didn't get the chair good and warm before he decided to stick the shiv in Joe, which kind of had a little bit of poetic justice about it, I must confess, decided to stick the shiv in Joe and go back to being the Republican that he had always been since he knew the difference. So Joe despises legislation that works for we the people who are out here busting our ass trying to make that more perfect union. And in this case, this interview with Neil Cavuto, Bernie is the stalking horse for anything that's good for working people.
Everything, but it's not practical where I come from. Bernie keeps saying Medicare for all. I said, Bernie, we can't even pay for Medicare for some. I says,
Bernie, we can't even pay for Medicare for some, because that's been Joe's, and maybe some people don't know this, but that's been Joe's hobgoblin ever since he became governor. He says that, you know, we just can't afford to do anything that benefits the people of the United States or the people of West Virginia. Yeah, we're going to have to cut back. Can't do it. When in fact, yeah, this is the United States of America. We put people on the moon. And I'm pretty sure we can figure out a way to cover every single American. But what Joe is saying, well, it's code. It's we can't do it without me and my millionaire buddies having to pay a little bit extra in order to do it. And I don't know about you, but to me, there's a substantial difference between can't do it, which is along the lines of, say, using Einsteinian physics, going faster than the speed of light without turning into a pumpkin. Just can't. That's can't do it. And aren't willing to do it, or can't do it because it might make me a little less stinking rich. And the distinction is pretty damn broad. It's amazing how much stupid shit Joe can say in less than a minute.
Right now, the trust fund's going to go broke by 2026, and these are people who paid into it and earned it. Now you want to expand it. What happens? So it doesn't make sense at all.
What if?
How about if it's not going? How about? I know this is going to be crazy talk. How about if we expand Medicaid or Medicare, and we pump enough money into it to keep it solvent in perpetuity? Crazy talk, huh? I don't know about you, but I'd damn sight rather have Medicare for all than 700 flying fucking paperweight F-35s. Because I'm all liberal like that.
You were your nominee for president, and it's him versus Donald Trump. Who do you vote for?
Well, it wouldn't be Bernie.
You heard it. It wouldn't be Bernie. Because Joe Manchin is, I mean, if you look up Dino in the dictionary, you'll find two photographs. One is the little purple brontosaur that was the family pet of the Flintstones family. And the other is Joe Manchin. Truly, in every sense of the word, a Democrat in name only. And by the way, this stands in for other issues as well. This tells us that it matters not how damning the evidence against Donald Trump when it comes to a Senate trial of Donald Trump upon whatever the articles of impeachment are. Joe Manchin, future resident of Dante's Ninth Circle of Hell, where the betrayers go, is a no.
All right, so it would be the president, unless you leave it blank.
Wouldn't be Bernie.
Would it be Donald Trump?
Let's just say I'm going to make decisions based on what's best for my country and my state.
All right.
Yeah, the idea that he thinks for even a moment that he knows what's best for West Virginia would be a laugh riot if it weren't so damnably tragic. And to think this is the man who occupies the seat of Robert C. Byrd, with whom I had more than my fair share of disagreements. But Jesus. Jesus, Jesus. As Steve in New York says, what a fucking coward. Can't just say Trump. Yeah, just put on your maggot hat, Joe. And before I get any emails, yeah, I did. I supported him in the general election. Go read up on Pill Push and Patty Morrissey, and you'll understand why. Les writing, I guess we found 2020's Joe Lieberman, coming soon to the RNC near you. Well, no, I don't think so, Les. He's going to stay right there in the Democratic Party, where he can do more damage. And let's be clear. Joe Manchin saying he doesn't support Medicare for all is not an indication that there are good arguments against it. Joe Manchin saying he doesn't support Medicare for all simply means that Joe Manchin is not willing to stand up to his fellow millionaires and billionaires in the health insurance racket. And let's do remember that he is intimately tied to a pharmaceutical racket. His daughter Heather, with her bullshit master's degree from my beloved alma mater, right there at the head of Mylan Pharmaceuticals. She's the one, you may remember, who jacked the price of an EpiPen into space. David in South Carolina with a suggestion. How about we collect Social Security and Medicare taxes on all income? Collect it on those $25 million yearly bonuses. That could help fund it. Yeah, I reckon that'd be more than a drop in a bucket. Or how about we raise the marginal tax rate back to, say, not John Kennedy, but how about Ronald Reagan? Ron in Raleigh says, who's worse? Is Joe Manchin or Chuckle Schumer the worst senator? Is Joe's devotion to coal the only reason he keeps getting reelected? What a smarmy, disgusting sumbitch. At least my shitty senators are Republicans, and they're not trying to bullshit folks into believing they're something else. Todd in South Carolina stands says, that Joe Manchin to be an ass is really fucked up. He's telling you people to your face. You people. Right. Die, hillbillies, die. But Joe Manchin, that's a tough argument, Ron. Chuck Schumer can be bad because it can be awful because his spinelessness in the face of Moscow Mitch does real damage. On the other hand, Joe sits there and gives cover to way right of center people who think that they're Democrats. I don't know what you mean, Steve, in New York. Maybe Tulsi? If Tulsi's the answer, I don't want to know the question. Hey, thank you, Don in West Tennistan. Don says he'll boost his monthly subscription an extra $5 to help get us where we're going. And Ralphs said she's in for that. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you very kindly. Let me get a message to the group here. And so with about just a few minutes before the top of the hour, I'm going ahead and connecting to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And remember, we've got the stress line for you, too. I've double-checked to make sure that it's in working order. I keep connecting, and it keeps dropping, but it's connecting, and that's important. And also, 50 minutes into the program, we still need to raise $100 this evening, which kind of runs contrary to the whole thingamajig here that we've been talking about. But we got $100, and that'll fulfill Bruce's challenge, and we'll move forward from there. Brother Deacon Asa says, I think y'all have serious hearing problems. I just hear Joe Manuchin say he supports Medicare for all. All senators, that is. because the larger answer is, okay, then we're just going to cruise along and have a shit ton of uninsured people and a healthcare system teetering on the brink of collapse. Is that what we're going to do? Yeah. Steve in New York says, oh, dear, dear Bob, we can't have the poors having health care. How would the poors know they're not as good as his ilk? That was offered tongue-in-cheek, but I think there's an element of truth to it. Joe, I once heard Joe say, Joe who went to my beloved alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, when it was about 72 cents a credit hour, and went there to play football anyway until he blew out his knee. Joe said he's afraid that if we had tuitionless college for young West Virginians and young Americans, that people just everybody'd want to go to college, and wouldn't nobody appreciate it? And he says the same thing about Medicare, that if people could just go to the doctor when they're sick, well, they wouldn't feel sufficiently grateful, and they'd just be going to the doctor all the time, because going to the doctor is so damn much fun. I mean, we were there this morning at 8:30, and I mean, they had donuts and tea and crumpets and scones and dancing girls and dancing boys, and my goodness gracious, and there was cake. Oh, bullshit. People don't go to the doctor for fun. They don't like going to the doctor at all. One of the problems we have in this country is we could alleviate a lot of our health care problems if we were a little bit better at preventative care as opposed to palliative or curative care. It's a hell of a lot easier to try to keep people from getting things than it is to treat them when they've got it. Oh, I get it. Tulsi. That's what Steve in New York. Maybe Manchin will vote for Tulsi. Jesus. James in Illinois, Medicare for all. I'm thinking that the problem is that highly paid doctors represented by the AMA don't want Medicare for all because it pays a little bit less than private insurance. That lobby gives money to Republicans and Democrats like Biden. They don't give a fuck about making it up in volume, because they'd have to see more patients. There's the other part about the AMA that really sucks. The USA needs more doctors. The AMA doesn't like that idea. Fewer doctors makes them worth more. Just like the fact that most rocks aren't made of gold, otherwise gold wouldn't be all that valuable. Sure, if you had lots of gold, there are uses for gold that have nothing to do with jewelry, but it works just like that with doctors. If there are twice as many doctors, then everyone could see a doctor. Maybe doctors would get paid a little less, like the kind of money plumbers make. Plumbers do just fine. Doctors living on Medicare for all will do just fine, too. Let's make more doctors. Fuck the AMA. Yeah, which brings me to another point, because it's like a little tick that I have. Some people click away when the commercials come on. I generally don't, because changing channels on, like, AT&T TV Now is a dicey proposition at best, because they're really not that good at it. And they just jack me up by another $10 a month, too. But be that as it may. I watch the ads. And lately I've seen an ad run for nurse practitioners. Now, this is not me gooning on nurse practitioners. I'm just trying to figure out why they have to run ads, because that means that the nurse practitioners union is out there spending money, giving money to people who fucking hate them and us, namely the multi-billionaire for-profit media. But the message is essentially, I choose a nurse practitioner. And at the end, it's lots of people choose nurse practitioners. Why don't you give one a try? And it almost seems like a bad message. Because if you're having to pitch it that way, that means it sounds like that people aren't choosing nurse practitioners. You know, for most general practitioner purposes, a nurse practitioner does fine. And it's a way to try to alleviate what James in Illinois was talking about, too few doctors. But the AMA insists on treating medical education like some sort of fraternity hazing ritual. You know, where the doctor gets 2 hours of sleep and then has to deal with a sucking chest wound in the ER. That's how you make horrible mistakes, not how you deliver quality health care. Is it that way in the rest of the world? I mean, do people studying to become physicians in Germany or France or England or Italy, Japan, Australia, Bulgaria, Mother Russia, do they get hazed like that? I'm not asking rhetorically. I honestly don't know. I mean, I'd bet you that if it could be afforded, that the GPs in the clinic that I go to, when I can afford it, bet you they'd like to have a couple of noobs in there. Oh, by the way, thank you to Steve in New York. $10 challenge toward Bruce's memorial challenge. So if somebody will meet Steve's challenge, we'll only have $80 to go. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Subject line, print more money. David in South Carolina stands says, print more money. Really? This is a solution. I heard it before the $1 trillion tax cuts. We can just print more money. Guess I won't hear this from the same people concerning health care for all. No. Because print more money only counts when the more money that we print goes into the millionaires' and billionaires' pockets. Glass war! Goddamn right. We're getting our asses kicked. And so, with the gentle reminder, and I think this will forever be the new motto of Friday on the Front Porch, non est de felem Deum Damnatum. Let's go over to the front porch and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Does that mean no cats?
No, that means it's not about the goddamn cat.
Oh, okay.
Non est de felem damnatum deum.
All right. You want to hear about my generator story?
It worked. It worked like a charm, didn't it?
Yeah, it worked just exactly like I planned it to work. But the only problem we had during the power outage is the last day, Judy had a doctor's appointment, and it was still out. So it run the well fine. So I was taking a shower, and Judy decides to put in some article of clothing into the dryer to fluff it up so it would take out the wrinkles. As soon as she turned the dryer on, the lights went poof, and I went, uh-oh, I'm in the shower, so I had to stop. Rinse off real quick. I come out, and I looked at her, and she goes, I ran the dryer, you mad at me? And I said, I told you not to run the dryer or the washer or the stove.
While we're using the well pump. Because the well pump's on 240, right?
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, how many amps does it draw?
Oh, about 9 amps.
But still, it was 9, combined with the dryer, it was 9 amps too many.
Well, the dryer is a lot of amperage, you know. You got this big electric heat coil in there that fires up.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's what happened.
Well, I mean, you found a limitation, but overall it was great.
I knew the limitations going in, Bob.
I know you knew. But Steve was scared to death last week. You were going to burn the house down.
No, we were able to have lights in our and run our run TVs. I was just pleased as punch. I didn't miss the 49er game. I watched it on the big screen. They demolished the Panthers, and then last night's game was great, too.
I mean, is that really saying something, they demolished the Panthers?
Well, yeah. I mean, 51-13, was it?
Well, no. I got the score, but, I mean, what's the Panthers' record?
Oh, they were, like, 4-2 going in there, I think.
Oh, well, really? Okay.
They were on a four-game win streak with that backup quarterback.
Okay. Somehow or another, they just never register on my radar. Of course, I was busy last night with my beloved Mountaineers. Damn it.
They played on Thursday night?
Yeah. And they lost 17-14 to Baylor. Baylor's 8-0 and at the top of the Big 12, and we're 3-5 and in the cellar.
Well, Bob, just to be clear, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
I wasn't worried about Duncan and his abilities. What I was worried about was, you know, he had all these fires out there. Something would happen and some insurance nerd would come along and deny him a claim because
there's an army of them whose only job is to do that.
Right. And it wasn't, it wasn't inspected, you know. That's what concerned me. And then he would have been out, you know, his whole house. But I have no doubt in his abilities. I mean, he's an excellent electrician, I'm sure of it. But if you don't have an inspection and you don't get it certified, then that's what my concern was.
Okay.
Well, I'm smarter than the frickin' inspector.
I'm not arguing with you, bro. I believe that. Probably smarter than 10 of them.
You got to make sure the cat's doing the wires there, you know, leading to the generator. Hey, guys. Couldn't help that.
What's up, Rick? Well,
but, you know, there a lot of insurance companies, and not all of them, some of them are good players, but a lot of them, they just live to deny claims. They send adjusters, you know, that's what they do. They deny claims because then they don't have to pay it. And that's what concerned me. That's all. I had no doubt in his abilities whatsoever.
Steve, isn't it the golden rule? Money comes to us, never goes away from us, right? That's the insurance credo.
Yes, and we'll try to get your name right. It's Chris, correct?
That's right, Steve.
All right, thanks, brother. Shoot.
Hi. So,
I know I had a 50-50 chance between Chris and Dennis, so I was going to go with the Chris this time because there's a friend of mine, Chris, in Germany. That's how I'm trying to do this word association thing, so I don't screw your name up. I don't mean anything insulting by that. I don't, man.
No, nothing. No, it's fine.
All right, cool.
One other thing I should mention before we get too lost in the weeds. I got to meet Roger on Saturday.
Oh, that's cool.
And you saw what he left me.
Yes, I did. Oh, my God.
That's what I call meet and greet, Sparky.
Yeah, that was like, oh my God, when he pulled it out of the back of his truck.
That's pretty good for waste product from his yard, container. You know?
Hey, right. There's only 4 ounces in each container.
Oh, shut up. I apologize. That was peremptory and incivil of me, Roger. I will try not to do that again. That was just spontaneous.
Well,
I'm a bad person.
Yeah, you have sampled some of that.
Yeah, I'll guess. Mighty fine.
So other than the obvious, how is Raw Dog Kincaid doing?
Oh, you shut up, too.
haven't heard that for a while there, Steve.
You know, it's not...
Hey, I'd like to jump back a blast from the past.
Well, it's not... It just...
I'd like to jump back to what Sparky said. It was really, really great to stop by and see somebody that we've chatted with and chat roomed with and all the rest of it. And from everything Sparky said before, I always figured he was on the east side of Highway 5. It's kind of up in the foothills. He's not. He's down on the flats on the. I thought he was on the west side. He's on the east side. And standing out by his man cave and looking out across the pasture and all of that. And finally being able to put a visual on what he's been talking about. Was absolutely fantastic.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Sorry
about Grady, though.
Oh, not worried about that. On the other side of it, Grady
went and got a drink or went and got in his pool and came in and stuck his snout right in Roger's crotch.
We could have done without the visual, but
That's the standard greeting of dogs, guys. They like to do that.
At least it wasn't his beer. It could have been worse, you know.
Oh, and by the way, it's not every day I get on the wrong side of Ron and Raleigh, but I just got a note from Ron. Enough already. No more anti-Panther talk. It's bad enough that Cam Newton decided to become a vegan and now he can't heal.
Rear.
Left foot.
Hey, keep going here for just a minute. I was going to go down and spend the night in Chico and go up and take a look at the Paradise Fire and then drive home the next day. I get down to Chico, couldn't find a motel, didn't go see Paradise, and ended up driving home. Got home at about 2:45 in the morning. But I want to say that last Friday's on the front porch, as I was driving up Highway 5, kept me very awake and very entertained. I want to thank all of you for that, but I won't mention what the animal was you folks were talking about. However, the wind up on top of Sipsy's Summit was absolutely outrageous, with pieces of pine trees blowing across the highway.
Yeah, there's absolutely no wind here today, which is really nice.
Nice, yeah.
I think we can thank Steve for that program, actually, because he played the straight man impeccably. Right, Steve?
Yeah, Charlie Brown just missed the football, man. He's laying on his ass.
I listened to that again. That is so funny.
It's a good show.
Last Friday, yeah. Yeah, so I have an update.
Bring it on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Do we dare?
So there's like a 9-month reprieve of the execution, let us say.
Wait, why 9 months?
That's when my son's lease expires, and then at that point he can maybe look for a new place that might allow that certain type of animal that we won't mention here on this program.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see what happens, you know?
You're going to boot your own
son? You scared the shit out of me when you said 9 months.
Oh, no. That's just when the lease expires, July 31st, next July
31st.
Yeah,
that's what she said.
Non est infantem, okay?
Okay.
Everybody pitch in for diapers for Rick.
Oh, no kidding, man.
Diaper fun.
Well, that would be kind of an immaculate conception, you know, based on our ages anyway.
Dude, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, that's true. Just read the Bible, right?
Yeah. Oh, and hey, I need to jump in. Renee just jumped in and matched $8 worth of Steve's $10 challenge. So that's awesome. Thank you, Renee. So there's $2 left on Steve's challenge. So that would take Shirley and Bruce's Memorial Challenge down to $80. Great way to start the month.
Awesome. Well, Bob, did mine come through or
Matt? Oh, did you jump in?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is this just kind of pisses me off because I don't mean you, Steve.
Yeah.
For some reason, some evenings my notification, I rely on my email client to show me the notifications, and sometimes they come through and sometimes they don't. It could be that, hey, I may look in here and we're done. I mean,
I printed up a receipt, by God, in case you wanted to see it.
No, don't worry. Good man. Waiting for it to load here sometime in the, you know, this geologic epoch.
Fundraising goal, $200, $10 donation, receipt number 832.
Yeah, okay, there we go, there we go, hold on.
Yep.
Wait a minute. Yeah, we only got $30 to go.
Minus five, carry the three. Receipt number 832.
Yeah, so we got $30 to go. Because in the meantime, Charlene jumped in, and Tracy jumped in, and you jumped in. So
cool.
So we got $30 to finish it up, which is huge.
Want you to know, and I don't mean to sound like Bill Clinton, but you know, I feel your pain with this medical insurance. Mine went up.
See, that's the thing. I don't even necessarily know what it's going to be, but I know I'm going to be casting around trying to find it.
They're going to beat you with bad. I'll just give you fair warning, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm 55 plus with pre-existing conditions. They're going to eat me alive.
It's going to probably cost you about $10,000 a year, Bob, is my guess.
Air's been up $50 a week, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're on a tight budget, yeah, it hurts, you know. What are you going to do? You got to pay it. You got to have health insurance.
So would the fundraising goal be like $225 or $250 a day? What are you thinking?
I've had people tell me everything from $250 to $300.
Whatever it is, we gotta do it.
Yeah,
we gotta keep you healthy, or otherwise, fuck.
Yeah, man. So if we
Points
do,
the reason goes out the window. So
if we do some quick math, you do like what 20 programs a month, okay?
Yeah.
So if you charge $50 more, that would be like
instead of a half a Big Mac, you're paying for a whole one. With whoop-de-doo. You
know? Yeah. So that would be like what about $1,000 more a month? That's about what you need, I think, Bob.
Yeah, I'm guessing on an annual basis, probably so.
Yeah. But so it'll be you, Agnes, and then Ferg, and any other of your other kids or not?
No, just me.
Oh, just you.
Bob has horrible stomach problems.
Oh,
man.
What about Agnes? Isn't she covered by something?
Yeah, she and Ferg and Margie are all covered.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, then it might not be that much for you. Who knows?
Well, when you get it nailed down, let us know, Bob, and that way we can all make up the difference or do what we can.
Well, that's why I said, you know, it kind of lit up for me because it's open enrollment now, so I have to do my annual dance of, no, you can't have ACA, we're going to kick you over to Medicaid, and Medicaid goes, are you fucking kidding me? And we're, and you know, lather, rinse, repeat. I don't know if it would be like that in a civilized state. There's no way of knowing.
God, you gotta love America, Bob. I tell you, what, the greatest country in the world on earth forever.
Yeah. Under God, amen.
Under God,
amen.
I was paying, I think, about $193 a month at the end when I was on Obamacare.
Yeah, well, it was the first year Obamacare came out. It was very affordable. In fact, my rates actually went down. I about shit.
Right, but what you got to realize is that
trickling up.
You know, the Republicans hate people who are on public assistance. You know, they just sit around and they want to go and buy Alaskan king crab legs down to the HEB, and hardworking people what ain't got the food stampers. They're standing there with some beans and some Kool-Aid because that's all they can afford while the welfare queens is eating shrimps.
Well, you know,
but wait, just to finish that all off, The real welfare queens are these fucking health insurance companies. And when they realized how much money they could get out of the ACA, well, you know, they just called the accounting boys in and said, hey, guys, can you dummy up some sheets that show that we're just going to need a whole lot more welfare money from the government, or else we won't be able to insure as few people as we already insure. Can you do that for? And the accountants go, well, hell yeah, that's what we went to school for.
A rising ship, it raises, a rising tide raises all ships is what I was trying to get at.
Yeah, and but if you ain't got no ACA, boat, you drown.
You drown. But the first year the ACA came in, I was still with the post office, and Karen was too. She'd been there 20-some years. And our rates actually went, and that's ever since then, it's been on an exponential hike every year, you know, so. I hate this time of year. I hate opening that envelope because you know they're going to kick you in the nuts, man. Yeah.
So. Well, you know, and Bob, you had the right point. I mean, when are the maggots going to wake up and realize who the real welfare queens are in this country? It's all the executives. It's the executives on Pfizer and in the pharmaceuticals. It's the Mercers. It's Koch brothers.
Well, you know, if we could ever get close enough to them, and Agent Fred, I'm not talking about anything violent. If we could ever get close enough to them to hold up signs pointing at them and saying "Welfare Queen,"
exactly.
Maybe we'd get the message across. But see, we're fighting up. We're going uphill with one foot in a bucket because. You know, their fellow travelers are the billionaires in the for-profit broadcast industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, that note I had from Gary last night talking about Mrs. Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell. Yeah, that woman could not care less.
Oh God, she's got
whether people whether people have health care in this country because she lives in an igamfoo universe. I got mine. Fuck yeah, you.
Yeah, she's covered regardless. They had to rip her chest open and put in a new heart. I mean, they could do it. She could probably blink and wake up the next day healthy as a horse, you know?
Well, in my mind, the whole ACA was nothing but a gift to the insurance companies.
Right.
Keep the price down for a day or two, a year or two, and then just start jacking rates. And the insurance executives, instead of fucking the little people individually where they get pissed off, now they've got their fingers into the federal pot and are just making more and more and more money and raising the rates and blaming it on Obamacare.
But Roger, don't forget, please, that they had help. Okay, the Republicans quietly went about the business. You know, Marco Rubio was part of it. Of fucking it over so that all of those things would happen. They did that. And then you got, you know, the lawsuits saying that the mandatory buy-in was unconstitutional.
Well, Marco slipped him a poison pill.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the nothing like this happens by accident. It's the same, and it's the same script. And they've been on it for a long damn time. No sooner was the National Labor Relations Act passed than Republicans, as soon as they got power, went after it hammer and tongs, and that's how you get Taft-Hartley. Okay,
yeah, but you got the Taft-Hartley, and you've got Reagan with his reform of the Social Security system, which put in the government pension offset and the windfall elimination provision, and then you got the Medicare won't take care of copay with the VA. It's all just fingers in the pot. And the EPA was another one. Nixon gets credit for the EPA. The EPA was created to take states away from environmental protection, move it all over to the federal government because it was easier to control 100 senators than it was 50 state legislators. And this has been a constant Republican fuck the people.
Right. Yeah,
agenda
that's a
forever.
That's a constitutional doctrine called preemption. the federal government said they were going to preempt. They were going to preempt environmental lawmaking and make it the purview of Congress and not that of the states, just as you said. But then they turned around and said, hey, we're going to allow the EPA to farm it out to back to the states. So you wind up with laughing stocks like the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, which turns out to be the West Virginia Department of Environmental Permitting. And all they do is sit there and rubber stamp all day long. Rubber stamp permits that, you know, wind up poisoning the people of this state. And it ain't just us. Virginia's a laughing stock. Alabama, you know, you do have some states that aren't laughing stocks. California, Oregon, Washington. But even they have their problems. And it turns out, by the way, a couple of nights ago, I announced, Brother Deacon Asa made me aware of it. I announced that nasty-ass spill in North Dakota. Boom. It's bigger than they said it was. And it's just going to keep getting bigger than they said it was. And, gosh, you know, we don't know why it happened. Well, you know, fuck, I'm not an engineer, but I know why it happened. It happened because pipelines leak. There has never been...
expand and contract.
Yeah.
They expand and contract.
Never has there been a pipeline built that did not leak.
Yeah, but coal, tar, sand crap that they're pushing through those pipelines is some of the most corrosive and abrasive fluids you can put through a pipeline.
Sure.
It's bitumen. It's bitumen's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
And I think they're burning that shit, you know, in China. What's wrong with that?
I think I could speak for Rick just like I do my industry. We're not all bad folks. In fact, we don't even deal with health insurance because we know what a black eye it's going to put on us. So we don't do it.
Well, you wouldn't want to get into it because unless you've got the infrastructure in place to tap into the sweet, sweet welfare money, you're going to get killed.
Yeah. You're going to take a bath. You're going to take a hell of a bath.
Yeah, I mean, the entrance cost for a health insurance company must be tremendous, you know? I just can't imagine.
They're kind of all proprietary. You got your Humanas, your Blue Crosses, and,
you
know, your Kaiser Permanentes, your KPs. They're all proprietary, you know, for the most part.
And they advertise like crazy.
You
know, the Medicare Advantage, Medicare Plus, all that stuff. Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, but both Blue Cross and Kaiser, when they started out, were non-profit mutual type companies.
Right,
that's exactly right.
You were part of it. And I mean, I bought a life insurance policy when I got out of the service in 68, and it was a mutual company. And a certain amount of time, I'd be shares in the company, blah, 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 to pay my insurance for years and years and years. Well, they took it private. I got bought out, and now I'm just fucking screwed, just like people that had the insurance thing, you know, the health insurance thing. It's just a corporate scam to set it up. The government says, okay, fine. And then they start making a little bit of money, and they decide they want to make a hell of a lot more money. And they go to the government. The government changes the regulations, and they fuck all the little people. And people like Betsy DeVos, I know hers didn't come from insurance, become mega fucking multimillionaires and continue to screw the people. By the way, who's going to pay her $100,000 fine?
Right. Us. We the people. You know, one talking point I'm hearing is that, you know, against Medicare for All, it's like, you know, we don't want to turn the government, you know, we don't want to turn the healthcare system over to the government. How about if we say, let's wrest, you know, corporate control, let's wrest the healthcare system away from corporate control. I mean, that's really the problem.
Yeah. How's it worked out turning healthcare over to corporations or over to the capitalists? I mean, that's the automatic rejoinder to silly shit like that, because that, you know, that goes all the way back to the day that I was in D.C., And they were arguing the ACA, I think, for the first time. This is back like 2012. And there were all these, you know, back then they weren't maggots, they were teabaggers.
Right.
And there and there was one individual buzzing around in a powered chair. And I don't mean I'm talking about like, you know, one of those mobility scooters.
The Rascals or whatever they're called. Yeah.
Yeah. With a sign that said, and it was really there. I saw it with my own two eyes. Keep your keep government out of my Medicare.
Right. Keep your government hands off of my Medicare or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, government paid for that scooter.
Yeah. Well, you should have taken a scooter from him and said, here, you want the government out of your health care? Here, give me your scooter then. I'm appropriating it on behalf of the government.
to me, guys, it boils down real simple. It's a dereliction of duty on the part of Congress not to fund health care for every single American. It's a dereliction of duty. That's what it is.
It's beyond that, Christopher, it's a constitutional failing. Now I know that your constitutional originalist types like fat dead Tony Scalia will say, well, you know, the preamble to the Constitution isn't really law. That's just flourishy, flowery language like the flourish on a person's signature with a turkey quill pen. But no, it is a statement of ideals. It's what we would call in modern parlance, the preamble to the Constitution is the mission statement of the Constitution.
Yeah, right.
And you have to act consistently with your mission.
Right. You're referring to promoting the general welfare, I assume, right, Bob?
In this instance, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, back then, it wasn't even in their thought process because the doctor, he did like bloodletting and things he probably didn't even charge for.
You didn't want medical care back then. Yeah. It would kill you.
Yeah, it was an experimental stage, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know.
Yeah, remember that no small number of the framers of the Constitution were whacked out of their mind on opiates.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When Thomas Jefferson was putting together the core of discovery to
it was the cure all
became, you know, Lewis and Clark, he consulted Dr. Benjamin Rush, and Dr. Benjamin Rush sent Lewis and Clark's core of discovery out with like a hogshead of laudanum.
Oh, geez.
And laudanum is nothing more than opium. It's an opium tincture in 100-proof booze.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much.
He was sort of the doctor of feel-good of the Jefferson administration, kind of like Trump had a Dr. Ronnie, was it?
The candy man.
If you're over 50 years old, your mom probably used to rub it on your gums when you were teething. I mean.
Yes, sure.
Paregoric,
yeah, sold in the stores.
Paregoric to keep you from puking.
Yeah. That's So that's, you know, the technology, medical technology, has far surpassed the original Constitution papers.
Yeah, and guess who paid for most of that, Steve? We the people paid for most of those advancements.
And right? it should be a right. And we're being screwed, as my friend Scott would say, you know, we're all screwed.
Well, let me tell you, there's nothing better than smearing a little poppy juice on a zigzag paper and rolling up a little bit of Mexican. all of a sudden, it's Technicolor dreams, baby, Technicolor dreams. And a hell of a good night's sleep.
All your pains and hurts are gone for a few hours, aren't they?
Oh yeah, they're great. You just don't have them, and as I say, you sleep great.
Let me tell you something, Roger. That I showed you my vape. Your stuff works great in this vape. I'll tell you.
Good. Which one? The darker green or the lighter green?
They both look pretty appetizing to me.
I can't remember which jar I took it out of.
It affects short-term memory, Sparky.
I ground up a bunch of it and filled up my little Tupperware thing that I have with the grinds in it. It only takes a pinch with this vape. You know, I mean, you're good for the day.
Y'all in your high-tech shit. Y'all just kill me. That's
great. Hey, Brother John.
The more leafy is this year, and the more closely trimmed is last year.
Well, at least I got a tincture. Well, I mean, the tincture is better than a zero. It works.
Hey, guys,
I'm set up for a long time.
Yeah, well, if you feel like paying anything, send it to Bob.
Don't worry about it.
I'm not talking about what I left you. I'm saying if you think you owe me some money for it because it was so much, send the money to Bob.
Nah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
We got to keep you on the air.
Well, I know, and we're getting there. Tracy wanted to make sure that I knew that what she had put forward was a challenge. So if Tracy's challenge is met, we'll be done, or very nearly, be like $7 left or something like that. But that would be awesome. And hey, we got a new Patreon member at the very first of the month. Mark, thank you, Mark. That's awesome. Thank you very, very kindly. And I hope we live up to your expectations. Thank you very kindly, Mark. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Haven't you noticed, Bob, that people love to punch down? They don't look up at the multimillionaires. They look at poor folks and want to deny them something they don't think they deserve. We're now paying for Trump's tax cuts for the rich. The top 20% garnered 80% of the benefits of the tax cuts, but the bottom 20% are now paying for the cuts. Let's put that pipeline under the Ogallala Aquifer like they want to do and poison the largest freshwater source in America. Precisely.
And that's sickening. If Trump needed some multi-million money? Medical procedure, he would be able to get it. And with nice people, you know, like everybody in my Horn family, they couldn't. They didn't have the bucks. You'd be screwed, you know. Everything is just
John Grisbo was here, Bob.
Yeah, I saw John. John,
I hear him. I'm here. I'm listening in on the conversation.
Well, but John,
the general theme is money, buddy.
Well, but I conjured you earlier because I wanted your input on the exodus of Beto from the race.
Oh yeah.
Yes, he bowed out.
I didn't hear about that.
I hate to say I'm glad. You knew my point on this. You know, I supported him tremendously when he was running for Senate here in Texas. When he jumped into the presidential race, I supported him, although I did not think he was on the same level as everybody else that was going to jump in. And maybe I should have been more supportive, I guess, but I could see the handwriting on the wall that he was not going to make president. Is he a possible vice president pick? Well, I'd like to think so.
Is there an open Senate seat, Uncle John?
He's not going to run for Senate because he declared that also, and as well he should not, because MJ Haggard's down here running a pretty good race down here right now.
You and I are on the same page through all of this, yep. John. But yeah. So what's the timing? Do y'all elect another governor in what, 2022?
2022, yes. Yeah.
So, you know, he's got.
We're talking about that.
Yeah, he's got 2.5 years or 2 years.
Yeah.
And just go around, keep shaking babies and kissing hands. And
here's what I want to see. This is what I want to see, and I want to see it out of all of these people. All right, Beto drops out. Let's go home, visit the family a bit. You know, he's been on the road a long time through his Senate run, through the presidential run. Let's visit with the family. Let's get calmed down. He had that shooting out in El Paso. But then when the timing is right for him, and he needs to get back out on the trail with somebody he's supporting or as a general speaker, because we have to move that. This is what it bothers me. You're running for president. OK, you didn't make it and you're going to bow out and then you disappear. Well, bullshit. This is going on. And I want to see those people involved using their voice. He's got a magnificent voice. He knows how to use it. And he needs to be out there supporting the party. You know, this ain't time to dick around.
I would guess that time that you need is probably when's the Texas? Y'all are on Super Tuesday, right, John?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So after Super Tuesday, once you have a formal Democratic candidate for John Cornholio's seat, then let Beto get out there in conjunction with, I presume, her and go around arm in arm and motivate people, hopefully beat John Cornholio.
Yes.
And then, in that entire time, you're keeping your face in front of people and you're ready for that 2022 gubernatorial run.
Exactly. Better can fire him up too, man. And, I love his ideology.
He's a great motivator. Yep. And we have to remember this shit because, you know, we're sitting around here with all the information that's come out. We got a lot of evidence. We got, oh, we got crimes. We got evidence. We got witnesses, baby. But you know, there's so much. And I think Nancy Pelosi had mentioned something about, or she said something that
she knows.
Yeah, she's worried about overload to the public, you know. Yeah. But the thing that we have to remember is in the hours after that vote, Donnie Boyd netted $3 million into his coffers on online donations within hours of that vote. That right. tells you something, baby. This is not
a fight. It tells you how stupid the Americans are, it's 30% of it. You know?
This in-your-face, I'm not a nice guy bullshit that he's going to sell.
Stupid.
That is going to be
well,
ate up
shit,
by these
they're
people.
Selling T-shirts with the dog's picture on it.
There you go. There you go. He's,
and I don't know if you—I don't know if you saw this, but he tweeted.
Yeah.
I kid you not. He tweeted a dumbass, fraudulent, photoshopped picture of him. Photoshopped picture of him putting the Congressional Medal of Honor around the neck of that German Shepherd. Yep.
Oh geez, yep. No, it's a Belgian Mastiff, Bob.
Underneath the it's German Shepherd sticker, was Bob. A Vietnam vet, Bob. That's what I was trying to say.
I got
say.
A new piece of my friend Thomas Morgan out there. I call him the Picasso of resistance. He got Donnie standing there with a canine, what we call it, what Donnie calls a dog, pissing on his leg. So I like this old boy. He's a fantastic artist. And, he sends me all his stuff, and I'm just tickled to death.
Yeah, and now Nitwit Nero says that I want to invite the dog to the White House. At the same time, he didn't say anything about wanting to meet any of the actual soldiers involved in the raid.
It's a bumper sticker.
He doesn't even like pets. What's his problem? What's he thinking?
Exactly what the shit is.
This guy's dumber than a bag of hammers, and all his supporters are.
But
too.
He'll shit his pants if he's around the dog because he's scared to death of animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hates animals. Oh, you can tell. He does.
Well, you know, at least Hitler likes German Shepherds, guys.
It doesn't have to be
don't
that.
Don't forget that.
It's a dog. It's a photo.
Oh,
op.
Yeah.
Put out at the strike, at the moment of the strike, you know, that he's in there in the Situation Room and they're all gathered around. Look at that picture. That's a posed-ass picture. If there ain't nobody watching shit.
Well, the time
because the photographer's standing in front of the screen.
Yeah. Hey, move out of the way. We can't see the screen, photographer.
It's all about the.
Are
it's
these
all
people
about,
really that fucking stupid? Yeah, I guess they are.
Well, the maggots are. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what I'd like to see Beto do is I'd like to see him campaign with the eventual Democratic nominee in Texas because we need to put that in play this time around.
We need to
electorally. You know, we can't ignore it.
Yeah, we've come so close down here. There's been so much work done trying to get Texas to go blue, and he needs to pour his heart into it, baby.
I mean, we need more voters to register. You know, that's the key, and also to turn out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the turnout is the worst in the country, isn't it, John, or something like that?
Uncle John Duncan's shouting at you, brother.
Did you see what Andy Pagoda wrote on Donald Trump's Facebook page about? I'll read it to you. Donald Trump posts, oh no, Beto just dropped out of the race for president despite him saying he was born for this. I don't think so. And then Andy writes, you weren't born for it either, fuckstick.
he is a crazy guy. You can find him on Facebook. He's called the Filthy Mouth Liberal. And he is a guy that will just cracks you up. He's just one of those people. Just like me, just opened his mouth. He speaks his mind.
Who's this?
His name is Andy Pagoda. Andy and then Pogta. The Filthy Mouth Liberal.
Yeah.
You can find him under the Filthy Mouth Liberal on Facebook. He comes into the family room with us when we have our Blue Dot family meeting and talks. And he's a wonderful person, and he's got a little bit of history in radio, so his voice is just smack, you know, right on. And he knows how to speak and everything. And he, like a lot of people, are just speaking their mind. Jesus, it doesn't take a rocket scientist nowadays. We got shit all over the place. That's not our problem. We got evidence all over the place. We had evidence when Mueller got done.
Here's the age-old argument. May I put a question to the Horn family real quick? I mean, I want everybody's input on this, too, if you don't mind. What are the odds that you think the Senate will actually convict?
5%. 5%.
Yeah.
Maybe that's generous.
Billion to one. You asked for odds. The odds are billion to one.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'll take
the odds.
Well, we have to take the high road.
We need to force the issue. When it comes down to the Senate, you know, in the Congress right now, you know, congressmen, they're a bit different than senators. In the little picture, I guess, in the big picture, whatever you want, however you want to look at it. What I'm trying to say is every congressman is in the Republican Party is right now playing the game. Well, if you keep your mouth shut and go with Donnie, you get some money out of that war chest. He's got over like, what, $350 million he's collected up there. Not that he's really going to give any of it out, but it's the temptation. He's got them locked down for money. But
John. He is giving money out.
Yes. Well, he's holding it back. If you say anything about him, oh, shit, he'll snap it right out of your mouth.
Right. He sent out a fundraising email saying he wanted to support Cory Gardner and name several other senators. The one senator he did not name was that noted Republican moderate, Susan Collins of Maine. Yeah.
Because she dared.
Yeah.
You know, this Jeff.
Send money to Joni Ernst, the guy in Colorado. Sending money all over the place. It was on something on MSNBC.
Right, and it's money offered in exchange for a vote.
But
we have a word for that.
Exactly.
And the word for that happens to just
senators.
Yeah, and the word for that just happens to be listed as a specifically enumerated ground for impeachment.
Exactly.
Great tell.
That oven in itself.
Add it to the pile. Yep.
That's the problem, though. We can't get so big a pile that it just looks like it's just piling on. We need to come up with particular articles of impeachment.
Well, why not, John? With some due respect, why not?
We need solid three, four, five articles. You know, four articles of impeachment that the public out there can understand. You get so much bullshit out there. You get so much piled up, and it just gets to be overwhelming for everybody.
I mean, I
don't know the answer. I do know the fact that I hold on to the fact that I do think that we could push the Republican senators. They're up against the wall. They're grumbling back there anyway. They're trying to hide from this shit because the articles of impeachment will be approved in the Senate. There will be articles it is going to go to the Senate. So the Senate is going to have to try this thing. And there is only so much ducking and diving and sliming around that you can do. You can only spin it so much before your own integrity and your own dignity is being in question.
Well, they don't give a shit about their dignity. Well, they lost that a long time ago. But hold on. I want to throw this one to Billable Rick and Steve in New York if he wants to chime in. I really do think that any articles of impeachment need to include the campaign finance violations relative to individual one, because those things are damning. Because an Article III United States District Court judge, in a ruling that was not appealed and thus became final, found that the charges contained within the indictments or indictments against Michael Cohen were committed.
Yes,
that Cohen,
that's what I'm saying.
Cohen committed them, and that he committed them in a conspiracy with individual one.
Well,
that is a
fine.
Let me finish. That is
campaign violation.
No, that's a finding. That is a final finding of fact.
Yeah,
by an Article III court.
In Cohen's case only.
In Cohen's case only, but it remains a final finding of fact.
True.
And we know who number one is.
the minute he was inaugurated, he violated the emoluments clause. Which
yeah, but the see, that's the thing. You lose Merca on the emoluments clause because yeah. just like Donald hard, Trump, Bob. Most people think hold on, Steve, one person at a time, brother.
You lose a high school diploma, and I get it.
Lose the emoluments clause with Merca because most of Merca, like Donald Trump, thinks that emoluments are something that go in the lotion.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, they scrub on their skin. We need obstruction of justice and abuse of power,
bribery,
and the campaign finance.
Bribery. That's articles. The other thing. That's the other thing, though. Bribery is a specifically enumerated one of two ground for impeachment: treason and bribery. And bribery, it doesn't say accepting bribes, it says bribery. And that means offering bribes. And he tried to bribe the president of Ukraine. And that's another easy one to prove because among other things, while he's out there still hooting like a half run over barn owl about the whistleblower, he admitted everything the whistleblower talked about in front of cameras. They can, in the Senate, I'm sure they'll have rules saying, no, we can't run video of him confessing. But
he's going to read it on a fireside chat, baby. He's going to put it right out. That's what he's saying. That's what he said last night with some interview on some station. I don't know what it was, but that's what he quoted. He is thinking about reading it in a fireside chat setting. So people can hear that there is no crime. And the headline was the stupidest idea ever. You know?
Yeah, well, it'll be hilarious because it won't be us reading it in his stupid Donnie voice anymore. It will be him confessing in front of the American people.
Yes, yes. But before he does, you know, I got the damn copy of the damn transcript right here of the phone call, and it's just partial. It's partial. And there's still a whole lot of shit missing. I didn't see a single word in here about the Biden tapes, but evidently those two words were used in that conversation.
Yeah, you know, but it's not a transcript.
No, it's not a transcript.
It's a summary.
It's a pile of bullshit. It's the same thing. Barr came out with the right.
Hell, for all we know, Barr wrote it.
Look, nothing wrong with it. It's perfect. And they keep repeating that shit, and that's who they're dealing with. People that read bumper stickers, if you repeat it and see that bumper sticker over and over and over, next thing you know, the next words out of your mouth is, well, yeah, sports.
Oh, sports. Speaking of bumper stickers, Jesus Christ, two days in a row. So yesterday I'm toddling along in Nicholas County, and I see the beat-up old pickup truck that I was talking about that says, vote for coal, it's black too. So today I'm in the same county and I see a car parked in the hospital parking lot with a sticker that bears the legend. And I got it rat cheer.
Right here.
There's all kinds of stickers all over the back of it. But, and it's weird because, let's see, there's one sticker for the local head shop, but above that, an outline of an AR-15 bearing the words "Black Guns Matter."
Well, Rusty, if you're listening,
racism in there with your Second Amendment, Bob. That's just a Southern way of doing shit.
Yeah, I know.
Shitting me, fucking assholes.
I mean, we got a wheelbarrow full of shit. We could dump this fucker. Why just stick with one indiscretion with, you know, the Lithuanians?
Ukrainians.
We have a wheelbarrow. Okay, whatever. We got a wheelbarrow full of shit. We could dump on his head.
Well, I think we got to limit it to no more than like 10. Now. I think no more than 10 charges, 10 articles, or maybe less even.
Yeah. You don't want to pile so much, but each one of those articles, abuse of power, under that article, you could put out an article for impeachment.
Sub-articles.
That's right. All the shit that he did under that, so that you make sure that all the public really has to understand is, well, it's abuse of power, and look here, there's a bunch of reasons why.
All right, then let's move on to the other things, to the campaign finance, and let's list all that shit under there. And you know more of that shit's coming, more of this Giuliani case comes out and how that money was funneled from Russia through Ukraine into right into the GOP.
Yeah, and don't forget the Lev and Igor show.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coming up. That's what I was referring to, Bob. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, that's
Lev and Igor.
That is
crazy Russian guys. But, Lev and Igor.
The Festrump brothers. But there's
the whole shit house on his head.
Well, no. But you got to be careful, John, what you were saying about having like subsections to account.
Right.
Because it's very easy for Moscow Mitch to tell them that if any single subsection fails, the whole thing fails.
That's true. Well, I'm not a lawyer, Bob.
Neither am I.
Didn't I see the day
those guys have to figure out how to do this.
You've got to make them severable, as they say in the legal parlance.
That's the word.
What Rick said. That's what
that 17% approval rating Moscow Mitch has, so he really doesn't have a whole lot of weight to carry around.
All these guys. That's what I said.
He doesn't care, Steve. Enough
that we can turn the Senate.
He has the NRA money.
The magic abortion words at the end of all of this.
It doesn't matter. He's got National Ruble Association money. He's got Elaine's money. He's got Russian oligarch money.
But he wants to live here.
Fossil fuel money.
He wants to live here. And he can't do that if he shows himself to be such a... But what are we kidding about? He's been showing that shit ever since Obama was in office. He's an obstructionist from the word go. He's still doing it right now. Everything that the Democrats have done in the House, that asshole is still sitting on the Senate. He is the gatekeeper. He needs to go, baby.
He's the Grim Reaper of Democratic legislation. That's what he is. You know?
He's not. He has played this game ever since he got that seat.
Yeah.
I know his latest poll number was 18% approval. That
doesn't matter.
Money will cure that.
Yeah.
It's like an evangelist healing prayer cloth.
Right.
All right. I got another topic for us, courtesy of Flavio.
Yes.
All right.
Subject line, Ilhan Omar. The fuck is wrong with her? She voted against recognizing the Armenian genocide. At the same time, she voted against sanctions for Turkey. I'll just leave that there.
Well, I voted against sanctions. I don't like that shit.
Well, I'll go ahead and say it. Because one of the beauties of not participating in any religion is that I can criticize them all.
All of them, maybe.
And I don't have any, anybody who's ever tuned in on Prayer Meeting Wednesday knows that I spare nothing and no one, when it comes to deconstructing the wickedness of which religion is capable. And I do not want to say this, but I will. Ilhan Omar did what she did because she was unwilling to speak out against a Muslim country.
Yeah. As sad religion. As that is. Yeah.
I don't like saying that, but you know what? It's not like it's anything new in the Congress. How many good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans?
I love that shit, Bob.
Would dare speak out against Jerry Falwell Jr., former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, Kenneth Copeland, Creflo Dollar. What's her name? Janet White.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those freaks were laying.
Rick Wiles.
Yeah, well, yeah, but before that, before they had the impeachment procedural vote yesterday, a bunch of these fiends and freaks went over and laid hands on Donald Trump and prayed the Holy Spirit for him. So
Thank goodness I can relax.
I've seen that. How'd that work out for him?
It is not Islamophobic to say that Ilhan Omar voted consistently with her faith, because it happens every goddamn day in the Congress of the United States and in every state legislature in this country, all the way down to city councils and county commissions. There's not. We are supposed to be a secular state, a nation. We're not. We're supposed to be. The Constitution clearly says there shall be no religious test for holding office, but while it hasn't been codified, it is a fact that there is.
Go ahead and say you're an atheist and see how far you get.
Right. You're done.
And you're never going to get there.
You know, it's like something that happened the other – because I am faithless, because I bow no knee to any deity, any sky creature, bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, invisible God. Friend.
Yeah, I'm right there.
Because I don't do any of that, I can speak plainly about it. Okay, so, you know, she likes to wear her headgear in Congress, and I say more power to her. If she but you know what? More power to a member of Congress who gets elected and insists on wearing a colander on their head because they are followers of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and the Flying Spaghetti Monster will get them if they don't wear a colander on their head. All right?
You might as well believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny.
I make no doubt
to anybody I'm an atheist, but when I am cornered, and they say, well, John, what if you're wrong? What are you going to say at the hand of God when you're standing there? And my response has always been, I'll give him one fucking opportunity to apologize to me, and that's it.
Yep. There you go.
Yep.
Well said.
Speaking of atheists.
I love that. That
speaking
is so
of atheists.
I've always said that. What are you going to do if it's real and he's there? Then he's got one opportunity to say he's fucking sorry.
If he's so omnipresent and all that crap, he could go back and do a mulligan and make everything right.
Well, it reminds me of Robert Frost's shortest poem. It's two lines. Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee, and I'll forgive thy great big one on me.
There you go, baby.
But there was video out a couple of weeks ago. And on its face, I tended to say, hey, you know, this is nice, because Agnes showed it to me, and she said, you know, this is sweet. This is what sisterhood looks like. This is solidarity. There was a women's soccer match going on, and apparently one team had, and it was in some Middle Eastern country, but the one team's women were running around with their hair flowing freely, and the other team all had headgear. And one woman's headgear came loose. And play stopped. And all the women from both teams, especially the women who were free to have their sinful hair uncovered, ran and hovered around her till she could get her headgear back on. And Agnes said, that's really sweet. And I said, I'd like to think so too. But I said, I don't think you're being fair if you don't acknowledge that there's a substantial chance there's a bunch of men sitting in those stands who would murder her on sight or call down a fatwa on her for having her filthy female hair uncovered in dire offense to their imaginary invisible friend. And Agnes said, I hope you're wrong. I said, well, I may be. But all they got to do is see that on TV, and people will start looking to put a bullet through her head. Because fundamentalism. And again, am I saying that that only happens among Muslims? Nope. It happens in the Jewish community. It happens among Christians. Look at the freakish, sickening Christian daddy purity balls, where they tell little girls that if they don't stay virgins until marriage, that they're no better than a chewed piece of gum, and nobody wants gum that someone's already chewed.
Ugh,
they do disgusting. That.
That's really disgusting, Bob.
And daddies, full-grown men, dress up their daughters in like Cinderella ball gowns and take them to dances, Christian dances, where, oh, Jesus, it's like a fucking auction. And it makes me sick.
There goes dinner.
Well, sorry.
Just about everywhere.
Hey, did I see that Darlene jumped in?
Yes, hi, guys.
Hi, Darlene.
Hi.
Hi, Darlene.
Hi, everybody. How you doing? Yeah, I wonder, is the debutante balls kind of the same thing?
As odd as it may seem, Darlene, debutante balls are positively licentious compared to these purity balls because you're talking about little girls who are 11 and 12.
Oh, God.
Once you've had your antiemetic, you know, go and just look up Christian purity balls.
Yeah, I've never heard of that until you just mentioned it.
Oh, God, I've talked about it. I'm sorry.
That's gross.
Oh, they give each other rings?
Oh, God.
I mean, it's like some sickening twisted marriage ceremony.
Promise rings, they're called, I believe.
Yes.
As a woman, I guess I'm not surprised. Men have, you know, and present company excluded, men have really weird ideas about sex. It's just, I don't know what is going on with all of that. But it's based, I think, or anchored in control.
Well, yeah, and I would warrant, Darlene, that it's probably another one of those nasty things that came with the development of sedentary agriculture.
Okay.
Because most of the evidence we have worldwide from hunter-gatherer societies, pre-sedentary agriculture, they were already doing art. You know, these are the people who go into the caves at like Altamira and Lascaux and paint all over the walls, and we don't know why. But they did art, and they did grave goods. One of the early hallmarks of us becoming human is that we didn't just leave the body for the buzzards. We stuck it in the ground, and we stuck some things that were important in the ground with them. And one of the things that we stuck in the ground with them were little religious representations. And I had a professor at WVU, a brilliant woman, who actually quantified those little statuettes. And without fail, they are either representations of the prepubescent female, the female of childbearing years.
Yes, the fetish, is that what they call them?
Yeah, fetish objects. And then the third one was, and I'm not using this, I mean, this is a technical term, I'm not using it pejoratively, the crone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and they're often referred to as Venus figurines.
Right.
Because quite often they will have pendulous breasts and round bellies.
Yep.
And that's what you get out of pre-sedentary agriculture humanity. They're very tied to the earth, and they are very tapped into the fertility of the earth. It's only when you do sedentary agriculture, I think a lot of archaeologists guess or surmise, that's when the sky god comes in, because you become dependent on the weather, because you're in one place. And so the sedentary agriculture probably gives us the beginnings of the notion of ownership of women as property. But it's a long time going away because, for instance, most early societies in Mesopotamia, for instance, the goddess Ishtar or Astarte comes into being, and she's a goddess of the moon, among other things. She was the patroness of the recipe for beer. And, for instance, in ancient Babylon, they had what was called temple prostitution. And it was a duty of women one day a year to come and be a temple prostitute.
Really?
For whoever showed up.
But what generates the fear, though, because they might be they might step out of their place.
Well, no, it is
because it's like a hatred and a fear underlying. I mean, hatred. I think that what underlies that is fear. What are they afraid of? What are men afraid of when it comes to women?
Ignorance. They fear what they do not know. If, for instance, and I realize I'm talking about a piece of fiction, but Mary Raynaud was a brilliant author. Have you ever read The Persian Boy or The King
No.
Must Die?
Let
me just implore you. Let's see, The Bull from the Sea, The King Must Die. I think it begins with The King Must Die. And it's Mary Raynaud, who was a brilliant English woman. It's her retelling in prose form the Theseus myth. And in the era as she understands it, it's that time of, and I think I've got my mythology right on this, it's a time when the Fisher King is a prevalent paradigm. So what she posits is, and this is all on the Attic and Peloponnesian mainland, that there was a king a year. And the king would live the most wonderful of lives. And oddly enough, you see this happen culture after culture after culture. Asia, all the way across Europe, it happened even in Mesoamerica and in South America, completely independent of anybody else's influence. It's just one of those things that's in our heads. So you get a king a year. He lives the life of Riley for 11 months and 364 days, and then on the 365th day, all the women get together and murder his ass so that there will be fertility. You can see it. You can see echoes of it in the Bacchanalias and the Minods of Greek mythology. But what it comes down to is, and it's so weird how so many of these things echo, Darlene. If you ever have read Mark Twain's The Diary of Adam and Eve, there comes a moment when Eve shows up with a baby. And poor Adam is just completely flummoxed. He's stupefied. And he says, I think she's brought home a bear cub. And I keep telling her, we can't keep a bear cub. But every time I tell her to get rid of the bear cub, the water comes out of her eyes again. It's obviously little Cain. So the thinking is that women kept they kept their understanding of the reproductive process to themselves and kept the guys in the dark as much as possible, because it was, and then that way it became all mysterious. And in men's ignorance, you know, because ignorance is always the genesis of fear.
Right.
We fear what we do not know. We fear what we do not understand. And to this day, and you can see it, reflected in all the Abrahamic religions, all the references in the Old Testament and the New. And God knows the Quran is full of it. That a woman's reproductive biology is a mysterious and filthy thing. And as a consequence, since it is not understood, it is to be feared and it is to be controlled. And if we don't, you know, they'll rule the world and they'll go back to slaughtering us every year.
And just to talk about like the whole idea of fear, and bring it forward to quote unquote modern day archaeology. Because you're tuned into this, Bob, I assume you were aware of the fact that on July 2nd had been, I think it's like the 82nd anniversary of Amelia Earhart having gone missing. That the National Geographic had sponsored an archaeological expedition by Bob Ballard from the Oceanographic Institute to try to find her remnants of her plane.
Right.
And one of the things, because I found this fascinating, but one of the things about her that they were talking about why she was so popular was that because she looked very, because of her physique, she was thought to be not intimidating to men at that time. I think it was in the 1930s and 40s, even though she was, you know, clearly she wasn't the best pilot, because there were plenty of women pilots that were even better than her. They were part of the 99ers or the 99s. She was a very daring pilot, but she was like the most famous and was considered to be not intimidating to men because she looked like a man because of her physique, because she was so thin and male-like, but feminine too. So I again, that goes to that whole idea of you know, of course, I think National Geographic was supposed to air the they sponsored Bob Ballard's expedition to the island of Nicomararo.
I read something about crabs there.
Oh God, those things are the stuff. The coconut crabs are the stuff of nightmares. They're like 3 feet of all bad, and they're all they are literally frightening. They will dismember you. As a matter of fact, they think if she was on the island, and I'm not saying that she was, I tend to kind of agree with some of the old dog veteran pilots who said she went down in the ocean. She just didn't have enough fuel to get to Nicomararo or anywhere else for that matter. That if she did manage to land on an island, that basically when she succumbed, basically the crabs dismembered her and dragged her bones and whatever was left.
Yeah, because those coconut crabs make piranhas look like pikers.
Exactly. Oh, bullshit. They are frightening. They're frightening.
Oh, my God. I've never heard of this.
Coconut crabs
are one of the neatest things in around, and and they taste, when you eat them, they taste a lot like Dungeness. They crawl around the jungle, and I have actually seen the prison cell where Amelia Earhart was held on Saipan. The generator on her airplane was one that was, quote, top secret, unquote, and was found in a lagoon. And somewhere around the Marianas Islands, Saipan area, north of Guam, and the generator, and the Japanese recovered the plane, and the generator was brought out and was used on the Japanese Zeros.
So who's speaking right now?
That's Roger.
Roger.
Roger, so you must know what the nickname was for her plane.
Not familiar.
She called it the Flying Laboratory because she was doing, they were using the plane in experimental ways, like as you're describing with the secret kind of generator. And
it was a flight that was surveilling the Japanese positions across the Pacific prior to World War II.
Well, that's one theory. I don't know if has that really been proven that was happening. I mean, that's one theory, that she was actually, quote unquote, a spy.
Well, the government was very much behind the construction of the airplane and the rest of it before she took off on her around the world flight.
And isn't it true that the plans for the Zero were also cabbaged from an American developer? Wasn't it Howard Hughes? Did I read that somewhere?
That one I don't know, and I wasn't expecting to talk about Amelia Earhart tonight.
Hey, you know what? Anything can happen.
I have to refresh my mind.
Well, again, that just goes back to what Bob was saying about women and not being intimidating to men. And she was kind of able to, quote unquote, get away with that. And I know Bob likes archaeology. I like archaeology, you know, but I just wanted to kind of bring
I want it. Now I want to eat a coconut crab before it eats me.
As far as I'm concerned, that's the best coconut crab out there is one on your plate cooked.
Right. And, you know,
I
have wandered through a coconut crab trail on Guam where we put out coconuts and then went around with the flashlight and collected them up in a gunny sack. Right?
They can climb trees, Roger.
They can. They are a land-based crab that reproduces in the ocean, and one of their favorite items is eating coconuts. And coconuts, when they get ripe, will fall out of the palm tree and hit the ground. Generally, they do not break. And a coconut crab has one small claw and one very large claw, and they will take and shred the outer husk of a coconut and then pound it on a rock to break it open, and then we'll eat the meat from the coconut, and that's how they survive on land, is they eat coconuts. So if you want to catch coconut crabs, you get a coconut, you take a machete, and you hack the husk until you get enough length to where you tie it to a pandanus or something of that sort, and you have a trail through the jungle, and you have these coconuts that you've opened, and you've cracked a little tiny hole without dripping out the milk, and you tie it to the tree. And then about 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you wander around with a flashlight and a gunny sack, mm-hmm. and you gather the coconut crabs, and you bring them back to the station. Well, the ranch station is where I was. And you have a big pot of boiling water like you do for Dungeness, and you throw the crab in. And you cook them in the boiling water, and then you pull them out, and you crack them open just like Dungeness crab, and you eat the crab meat. Now, whether they're a carnivore or not, I don't know.
So they do. So I did not know that they had one large claw and one small one. What I heard was that their claw is powerful, and it doesn't sound inconsistent with what anything Roger is saying, but it sounds like the claw is powerful enough to snap a or sever a human finger. They come out at night, and people that have gone to Nikumarora to investigate or try to see if they could find remains. I think it's the Tigar group that they propound a theory that she died on Nikumarora, Amelia Earhart, is that they come out at night. They don't sleep on the ground. They make sure that they are elevated above the ground, and they said that at night, they'll shine a flashlight around and they'll see all these little eyes shining at them. And that's so they're so weird.
It gets even.
Well, when I was out hunting them, we never saw eyes shining back at us. We went to the spots where we had the coconut bait out and just picked them up.
So when were you in Guam, Roger?
1966, 67.
Oh, shit, you beat me there. I was there in 172.
Wow. I was there
in 74.
Oh, you came after me. I left the message for you. I don't know. Did you get that?
And I think Boss Man Wayne was there in the early 60s.
Those are scary looking things.
Can I tell my story?
Yeah, go.
The very first night I got to my main barracks, was in transit barracks for a night or two. But when I got to my squadron barracks at Utapau, 307th FMS, they put me in this cubicle with a bunch of people. And I had got this upper bunk because the guys were already in there, had all the lower bunks in there. But anyway, it was the only one open. But I got in there, went to sleep. Now, woke up in the middle, I felt something crawling on me, and I pulled back the sheet, and it was a big old freaking coconut crab. I jumped out of that top bunk onto the floor, and then it just took off. I don't know where it went.
They are the stuff of nightmares for sure.
Well, hey, I've got some good news. I got some good news real quick. Thanks to Anatole and David in South Carolina, Stan, and Rico, responding to Tracy's challenge. We're done. We're done with fundraising. We met Shirley and Bruce's Memorial Challenge, and that is that is just tremendous, and I can't thank you all enough. And can I just point out, as I often do, I dare say that this is probably the only radio program in the United States of America that has discussed in the same segment the origins of male fear of femaleness and coconut crabs. And I got, well, I mean, anybody want to argue with me on that? I mean,
no.
And so I got one more piece of coconut crab trivia that's going to take them right off our plates, Darlene. This courtesy of Flavio. Let's see. Let me see if I can dig up my Richard hat.
I was just getting ready to just dig right in.
I do want to know what they taste like.
Well, though. See, this is, I got to work up my Richard Attenborough voice. While the coconut crab itself is not innately poisonous, it may become so depending on its diet, and cases of coconut crab poisoning have occurred. For instance, consumption of the sea mango, Cerbera mangajas, by the coconut crab may make the coconut crab toxic due to the presence of cardiac carcinolides. So I think they just went, you know, unless you've got some hot shot.
You just
got
to watch what your coconut crab's eating there.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, that kind of takes your free-range coconut crab right out of the mix.
Yeah, right out the menu, off right there.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite food of all time is soft-shell crabs.
Oh.
So I'm just curious as to how the coconut crabs taste, Roger. I'm curious as to what, is it reminiscent of anything that you can describe?
He said Dungeness.
The flavor of a coconut crab has a hint of coconut to it. I have eaten the soft shell crabs in Maryland. I've eaten Alaska King. I've eaten Dungeness.
Okay.
And crab has a crab flavor.
Sure.
All of them have a crab flavor. The coconut crab has a hint of coconut mixed into the regular crab flavor. And they are considered a delicacy on Guam. They are virtually extinct in the civilian populated areas, at least this is back in 67, because they have been hunted so extensively. Where I was stationed, the little station I served at was in a restricted area of the naval station on Guam that was pretty much wiped out by Typhoon Karen in the late 50s. It was on the Aroti Peninsula. And there were still munitions and crap left over from World War II.
Yes,
when
there
built
was.
When they built the Loran station, just prior to when I got there, the new equipment came in crates, and they bulldozed an area for our antenna. And there was a D8 cat that got a track blown off because the Caterpillar tractor walked over a bomb that hadn't been exploded. Created a cavity, fissure, and then when the equipment came and they had all the packing crates, they put it into that hole, torched it off to burn it all, and blew up another one. And over the cliff, some of us went down one day and came across cases and cases and cases of ammunition that the U.S. military had dumped over the cliff, and there were bones there and all the rest of it, because the Aroti Peninsula was where the Marines came and put in their first beachhead on Guam and built an airstrip to be able to take Guam back. So I was in a rather remote, isolated, restricted area of Guam, and the coconut crabs were very plentiful and very tasty. And this thing about being poisonous, I can't buy, because they breed in the sea, they come up on land, they spend their time maturing on land, they go back to the ocean to breed, and then come back on land. So
them being poisonous or anything like that, but is the coconut, like the hint of coconut, is that something like for a very fine-tuned palate, or is it pretty obvious that it's there?
It
Because, I mean, based on what I heard, it sounds like they can consume human flesh.
Well, any crab, a crab is a scavenger.
It is an opportunist.
Yeah. And
just like a pig.
To me, I mean, it wasn't a super strong flavor, but it was there. I mean, you could taste it. It's like people that make chicken Kelloggin, which is a coconut chicken number. Yeah, it's got coconut flavor to it, but you still taste the chicken. You still taste the crab, but it's got a coconut flavor.
It's there. I mean, they're beautiful looking animals. I mean, from what I've seen, the coloring and everything, but they're frightening. I mean, just basically.
Oh, the blue, the iridescent blue of a coconut crab is pretty. I'm not going to deny it.
Pretty,
well, from since this has become Crab Talk Radio, I do have, and since Darlene, you have said that you love nothing better than soft shell crabs, I have good news for you.
Love them.
And it is this, you know, you've got to be soft shell crab. Crabs have to be harvested fairly carefully. You know, if we're talking about the blue crab, you know, Maryland blue crabs, because you can wipe out the population in a flat hurry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, according to Scientific American, up around Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is a little closer to your neck of the woods, they're doing some experimental work, because we have been invaded since about the beginning of the 1800s by something called the European green crab. And since it's an invasive species, it has multiplied completely out of control. And so the story cites a scientist by the name of Gabriella Bratt, B-R-A-D-T. And what they're doing is they're surveying European green crabs, which extend from Maryland all the way to Nova Scotia. And they're stockpiling them. And taking data, and they are working with chefs to see if they can pitch them on the idea of serving them up as soft shell crabs, because if they can, it might be, you know, the good side of over harvesting. And it's not just the East Coast, by the way. They extend from British Columbia down to Southern California too.
Well, see, I don't mind trying this green crab, but I want to know I'm trying to, like, if they're trying to pass it off as a soft shell crab, I would be really upset. Like, I want to know if I'm eating a soft shell crab, I'm eating a soft shell crab. If it's this green crab, just let me know. I'm willing to give it a shot.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You're no culinary shrinking violet.
No. Not at all. I like whole belly clams. That's my second favorite.
Those
can be disgusting to look at, but I love those. And the soft shell crabs, the thing I love about them is that they're only available, you know, here at least in Connecticut during, you know, from like June, July, maybe you can stretch it into August.
Right.
And so it's something that I can have access to, but only a certain time of the year, which I appreciate, you know.
Well, it'll probably be seasonally limited, I guess. I mean, there's a molting season for European green crabs too, I suppose.
Oh, okay.
But now it's listed as one of the 10 most unwanted species in the world.
Mm.
And they breed like they breed like the crab equivalent of rabbits.
What Roger said about the coconut crab getting basically wiped out in Guam, you know, I'm all for that population control, assuming it's delicious
what the Scientific American article says is the crabs will sell themselves, says Bratt, whose team has already connected with 15 local chefs interested in serving them soft shell. But before the treat can become a regular menu offering, she and her colleagues must unravel details about green crab's biology to pinpoint when to harvest them.
Yeah.
And they're apparently native from northern Africa to Norway, and they first got here in ship ballast and stuck to the hulls of wooden ships in the early 1800s.
Uh-huh.
They are
1817.
And they are a delicacy, or at least one of their kissing cousins is. the Mediterranean green crab is a delicacy in Venice.
Mm.
And they've been a delicacy there for centuries. They have a rich, delicate flavor. They can be fried and eaten whole in their soft shell form. But for some reason or another, a market has never taken off for them in the U.S. because it's hard to tell when they're about to molt.
Oh, so that's the trick. So that's probably why they're enlisting some of the professional chefs.
Right, and the fact is, it's more of that American exceptionalism, too, because there's a treasure trove, it says, of Venetian knowledge of how to do exactly that, because the Venetians have been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Huh.
And so Ron and Raleigh says, coconut crabs, you say? Here you go. And provided me with a photograph.
They're
hey,
big.
Hey, Bob, can I tie all this together with a beautiful red bow?
Oh, if you can do that, I got a cowbell for you, Christopher.
Well, I'm just saying to everybody out there in Horn Land that some women should be feared for the crabs they possess.
Okay.
Can I tie things back to real quick? I guess I'm the queen of bouncing around on subjects. Back to the whole thing about the ACA and
yes, please,
health insurance. What about pushing to get some sort of a law or something passed wherein whatever our Congress critters provide for themselves? And I'm talking about even my Democratic, senators like Chris Murphy and Blumenthal and all of them, whatever they afford for themselves, they can afford to us. The really good health care. I mean, I think Bernie Sanders is more subdued these days. I think he realized his own immortality. His own mortality with his recent heart attack. And he's one of the few that actually speaks out about the fact that he has some of the best health care in the world. If they can give that to themselves, then why isn't there a law in place that says they have to give it to the rest of us? Because we're footing the bill for all of that.
Well,
and it infuriates me that there's two classes here. There's the elite.
Well, right. That's kind of what drove me crazy about the initial coverage of Bernie's heart procedure. That one doc who said, well, if it was anybody else, if it wasn't a somebody, we wouldn't have kept him that extra day in the hospital. But you don't want to be the doctor who lets Bernie Sanders go and something bad happens. So that means that if you really, really, really want to make sure somebody's okay after one of these procedures, you should keep them as long as they kept Bernie. But the rest of us get our happy asses kicked out of the hospital a day early because they don't want us occupying the bed.
But even Chris Murphy had said a few years ago, well, we still have to pay some money into our health care, but you are not going to convince me that they're paying to the degree that all of us are. To me, people should be up in arms at this complete, this divergence here in terms of what they get as the elite and what we get. And we're footing the bill for them. And it's like, why aren't people saying, look, whatever you're giving yourselves, you need to give it to us too.
Yeah.
If you're giving yourselves the best fucking healthcare out there, well, we should be getting that too. We're paying for you. Why? I would rather pay for myself than for you, but it's like.
And it's not like we don't. And it's not like we don't give them enough money to pay for themselves.
Precisely. And they I was.
So we do have universal congressional health care.
Yeah. And, they may have to chip in a little bit. I mean, I think AOC said, she didn't have health care until she became a congresswoman. And I'm happy she's got that health care. I really am. But I want to be happy for myself, too, without having to, pay through the ass to get this health care.
I have federal employees health benefit. That's what my health insurance is covered under, the federal employees health benefit program. And my rates are, because I'm retired civil service and military, I'm old, so I have my Medicare. But I keep a full policy because my child, my son, I still have a son that's under 26, and I want to keep him on there. So I maintain my full policy through the federal process, you know, the federal program.
And I'm glad for you, John. Good for you.
It's 23 years I give for it, but you're right. What I'm paying and what I see other people paying, maybe that's a drastic difference. You know, I'm paying about $400 a month for a family plan. I go to the doctor. It doesn't cost me anything to go to the doctor because basically I have Medicare too. But, you know, my policy covers everything. I go to get x-rays. It's nothing. I haven't paid for anything in years.
As it should be.
John, you want to know how much
As it should be.
John, you want to know how much I'm paying per month?
It scares me to know.
All right, through the ACA, and I appreciate it because when I was in my 40s, I wasn't covered. John, I'm paying $1,168.17 a month as a single female here in Connecticut.
I don't know how anybody does that.
It's not sustainable.
Because eventually you're going to be forced between healthcare and food.
Precisely.
Or healthcare and shelter. Those things.
Exactly.
You know, I've said forever.
It's more than my mortgage.
The capitalist system does not work in healthcare. It just doesn't, because you're just absolutely saying, well, you got a price on your head, because that's what it is. They got to make a profit. And look at the CEO. You know, we can discuss that all day, how much CEOs of those corporations get paid. And that's just the CEOs. Yeah, I got to go into the vice president of this, vice president of that. Everybody's got to get a big salary. And your healthcare is the last damn thing they're considering on the budget.
And all the people that pay who sit there and deny your claims. How many of those people?
Oh, there's tons of them. Tons of doctors that work for insurance companies that can specifically put it in doctor lingo to deny your ass. But you're right. I go to the pharmacy. I go to the pharmacy to pick up my medication, and it's like $1.62 every time I pick it up. So I'm listening to the people in front of me, and it's like, that's $600-something. I'm out of shit. I don't have $600-something. If I didn't have what I have, I'd be on the street.
Yeah, John. Okay. Well, I take care of Richard. You know, and he's said he'll be 78 next week, and I go get his prescriptions all the time. And it's like, yeah, dollar here, dollar there. Yeah, it's yeah. Those same prescription would cost me $200 or something. It's just.
That's just for a generic, just by, and this is way low, but just to give you an idea, some reason or another, one of my prescriptions didn't get you filled last week, so I had to fill Ferg's prescriptions today. Mercifully, you know, I was able to get him Medicaid. So his two prescriptions were $1 a piece. My one proton pump inhibitor at a deeply discounted generic rate was $13. And so I run, and that was just because they forgot to fill that one. Just for the extremely basic generic drugs, the few that I do take, I'm about $130 a month. That's not anything kinky. I mean, that's not any high
throw grant exotic in there, baby, and you're done with.
Yeah.
But Bob, you said that I was catching bits and pieces of this, but that Agnes and Ferg and your daughter, are they like on a Husky type program?
I don't know what that is, but I mean they've got Medicaid.
They've got Medicaid. Okay. So but you don't.
Right.
And the thing is that what the fuck is the government thinking here? Because and Agnes said it to you, right? If something happens to you, the whole thing crashes and burns. And I've seen this with people even on Husky. It's like, why isn't the father, the husband, also being covered? Because without him, in certain familial situations like yours.
Because all the assets are deemed to me.
It's wrong, because without you there, as the head of house, you know, as the man of the family, you know, clearly both you and your wife are contributing into the family. You need to, I mean, if something goes wrong with one of the parents, that devastates the children as well as the surviving parent. It's wrong. Everybody should be covered in the family.
So you would think, but once again, I'm too poor for the ACA and too rich for Medicaid. Yeah,
Darlene, your mouth to Republican ears.
I'm telling you.
And Democrats, what do they care? I mean, Chris, and Democrats too.
Yeah, and by the way, James wrote in from Illinois and said the Congress is on the ACA. There are different packages available depending on how much you want to shell out.
Yes, that's true. You know,
the same way with me. If I there are bigger plans I could get, it would cost me more. But
right. And see, when it was rolled out, the welfare subsidized part of it, you know, the welfare going to the insurance companies, of course. It was all about, okay, there's going to be bronze plans and silver plans and gold plans, and maybe, I guess, platinum plans.
Right. How much money you got?
Well,
how much do you want to live?
But from Jump in West Virginia, all there has ever been is bronze.
Ooh. We had platinum in Connecticut for like 1 year. And I switched over. I switched from, remember, Bob, I told you at the beginning of the year I was trying to get a power wheelchair.
Right.
And I've got good news in that I.
Wow, what's that?
Hey, it's me, Flavio.
Hey, Flavio, mute for a moment, would you, buddy? Thank you.
So I came over, I switched, remember I said I needed to appeal their denial of my power wheelchair?
Right, right.
Okay, that was kind of like, Star Trek reference, the Kobayashi Maru. Who is the only cadet that beat the Kobayashi Maru?
James Tiberius Kirk.
Correct, because how did he beat it?
He hacked the system.
Right, he changed the rules. Yep. He basically changed the game. So what I did was I said, screw this. I switched insurance companies, which, by the way, when you talk to a broker, which is free to you as the seeker of insurance, the in our state and in Connecticut, the Access Health CT pays for the broker's advice. They'll recommend the basically the most expensive insurance, which turned out to be Anthem, and that's why I'm paying what I'm paying. Well, I switched insurance companies, and they got me the wheelchair. $75,000 wheelchair, basically. $28,000 is what they told me. I only had to pay $800, which they haven't even asked me for. So I got the wheelchair.
Beautiful.
So I'm so happy, but I'm paying through the nose per month, but I'm so happy. But the interesting thing is it's very, you don't know what you're dealing with, because this particular Anthem is great with the medical equipment, but they suck on everything else.
Okay? It's always a trade-off on something.
Yeah. Exactly, and you know,
John, it's weird because I had a carpal tunnel problems. I had to have to pay $500 for the surgery, which I'm grateful for. But for the EMG, EMG test, I had to shell out over $600 just for that.
Well, and so, there's the larger question, the deeper philosophical question, and this is the one that I think scares the executive welfare queen to death, and I think it's why they so hate Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the existential philosophical question of why, I've been saying this for years. Why should somebody be able to get rich on the agony, misery, illness, suffering, and death of their own countrymen?
Yeah, how can you look at
capitalism?
What business does capitalism have in healthcare? What business does the profit motive have in healthcare?
Well, I think it's like Bernie Sanders said, it's a sickness. You know, like, John, I'm thrilled that you have affordable health care. I want everybody to have it. That's, even Bernie Sanders. Help me out. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to begrudge that.
That's what I don't understand about the difficulty. People are afraid of universal health care. If you put, keep your government hands off, it's going to, at the same point, they love Medicare. But in the government system, the government has this, the upper hand. Look how many people work for the government. Jesus, everybody, damn near half the country. Sometimes I think there is a large pool of people. So the government gets a hell of a good deal from the same. I have Blue Cross Blue Shield from the same business, from the same insurance companies. But it's negotiated through the government, so we get a lot cheaper rate. So why don't you take that whole system and put it in that?
That's what my argument has always been. I got good insurance. I like the way it is. You know, it doesn't hardly cost me anything. And that's the way it should be for everybody.
Right. You know? And we want that, though. I'm thrilled for you. But there are those out there who, like Bob says, you know, I've got mine. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know,
that cannot be the deal.
That's a sickness. I think
it absolutely is. And here's another good question. Everybody loves Medicare. Yeah. Pretty much everybody loves the VA.
Right. All government-run organizations, Bob. Right. Is there a common thread
here? I'm beginning to think there is, but here's the question. We came up with the VA because we couldn't give health care to all Americans. It wasn't, I mean, if you're active duty and you're wounded on the battlefield or whatnot,
right.
They're going to take care of you. You know, they're going to try to put you back together if they possibly can. You know, MASH and MASHs were developed in World War II and Korea and whatnot. The question of how to take care of your military has always troubled generals, because you can't, you know, if your troops are getting all fucked up, pretty soon you're going to be out of an army. So there's that, but the aftercare for people who were done fighting, we only had to create the VA because Truman could not get universal national health care through a miserable, shit-eaten Republican Congress.
And here we are. What year is this, Bob?
Yeah.
We are. It's the same fight, but it's a fight that has to go on. You know, I understand the argument about going complete take over the universal. A lot of people, it's going to scare a lot of people because, I got good insurance and I don't want to lose it and all that shit. But it's got to be the power of everybody, because as long as we're paying our money into a particular insurance company, and then they get to decide what the hell you get in way of health care, which near the end, maybe, is not much. You know, we're going to provide you with some.
Yeah, we have debt. You know, Sarah Palin was, you know, right for all the wrong reasons, like a stopped clock. We have death panels.
Yes, we do. Yes,
but they're
we do.
Not called government death panels. No, they're capitalist death panels.
Yes.
And by the way, I have
to sit in a cubicle trying to determine whether or not he's going to give you that test you need or some other medical procedure.
And
it's up to him.
I got to jump in with this because, Darlene, you got fan mail a little bit ago.
Oh, okay.
Rico in DeBerg. Rico in DeBerg wrote in, "I'm gay, but I want to marry Darlene."
There you go, baby. How more persuasive can you be? Man,
that's
a hell of a compliment.
Thank you.
And David in South Carolina, Stan, wrote in a little bit ago, since we were into you know, sort of some sideways food porn, and said, "Why no calamari dish named Squid Pro Quo?"
It's on Donnie's plate. He loves a whole bottle of it.
And Ralphs wrote in from up Wisconsin way. Recently, Bob, I paid $125. For two insulin prescriptions.
That's sad.
It's wrong. That's so wrong.
It's so fixable, and at the risk of sounding like some sort of paranoid, I as I've noted before, I just bark at the moon every time I hear, whether it's Pete Buttigieg or Kamala or Uncle Joe or any of these people say, "Well, yeah, but we've got to take into account the hard-won health care of the unions." And again, I can't find anybody who says...
He started, Bob.
I know. I can't find any union people who say, fuck me running, I love my union health care. I can't find them. The only people who say that are the presidents of the unions who do the fucking endorsing.
Yep, there you
who
go.
Who grease the palms and give the endorsements... Yeah. And hope to, you know, maintain their tenuous grip on power, you know, all of that. But there's one other thing that's tucked away and hiding in all of this. When somebody says, "I'm afraid of what kind of health care I'm going to have if we have Medicare for all, because I like the coverage I have now. I have some sympathy for people who say that. And I just wish we had, honest to God, I wish Elizabeth Warren or Bernie and neither one of them can say it because it's not politically popular. Just and it would echo in a way some of the stuff that Pete and Joe and others are saying. But just look at America and say, groovy. You keep paying through the nose for substandard coverage, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, Bob, that's the point. And these people don't even know what the hell they have. They don't know what that coverage covers, and they never even have to use it.
Right.
And as far as the union, Richard Trumka just came out in an article Huffington Post. And he said if these unions, you know, the car unions and everybody involved in the unions didn't have to negotiate healthcare into their, it's the biggest thing they have to negotiate is healthcare. If they didn't have to do that, they would be so much better off.
Well, God bless him. I'm burned out on Rich Trumka, but God bless him for saying that.
There's another thing going on here.
Hang on. Wait, everybody. We haven't heard from Flavio, and Flavio badly wants in.
I haven't called in a very long time.
Flavio, before you go any further, is there any way that you can demodulate? Because you are way loud and crunchy.
Okay, I can do that. Hold on. How is this?
Not much change.
How about this?
Try again now.
Better?
Much better.
Dramatically so.
Okay. Well, it has to do with the microphone. It was too loud. I apologize. The thing that I'm worried about is we have a kind of a trifecta, if you will. You've got William Barr at the Department of Justice. You got Moscow Mitch in the Senate, and you got Putt in the White House. How the hell are we going to make it through this? And I'm just worried sick.
Let's don't forget about Pompeo over at State. Let's throw him in that mix too. We got a crime family is what we got.
Mick Mulvaney.
Yeah. Talking about the Department of Injustice, the Senate, the presidency. What can the House do against that?
Well, I'm going to throw this out there, Bob. The House has a job to do. They have to dig for the facts. They have to have the inquiry. They have to have the facts. But what they need more than anything else is your voice. Everybody listening to this, everybody that listens to my show or anybody else, you keep reminding them it is your voice. The one thing that they are more afraid of than anything else is a voice that will not yield. We got to keep the pressure on. And I'm talking about we, the public, out here, you, me, every day in some way, do something that encourages somebody else to be a participant in this. Because if we don't, you know, we got a choice. We either save the world or we build a freaking graveyard for society. That's the choice we're coming down to, whether you're talking about health care.
Yeah, not just a shit ton of middle ground in that.
No. It's either we save this damn planet, our society, or we're just digging a grave for it and you're looking at a Mad Max world. You know, it's our voice, everybody's voice, but it has to be consistent. And we're at that point, Beto just bowing out. We have people that are going to bow out of this race. These people need to stand up and continue using their voice, supporting the issues. And
oh,
when
I've
we
got
come
a,
up with a
I
candidate,
a
maybe we, yeah.
Trying to stick to my promise not to endorse anyone, but there are just people that need, you know, sadly,
I'm the same way.
Sadly, Tulsi's not going to go away.
Stabbard. Oh, God, she's frightening. Yeah. I think she's going to try to.
I have a list of people I think that should not be in the race. I have not. Yeah. I don't pick a winner yet because.
Yeah. Marianne Williamson needs to go. Andrew Yang needs to go.
Yes.
I'd like to see Amy Klobuchar gone.
Yep.
I'm very close to saying the same thing about Kamala.
And we're all on the same page with this. I don't know why these people. I'm proud. You know, I've been saying for a while that Beto should have been out.
Joe needs to go.
Yes.
Uncle Joe needs to go.
Yes.
Joe needs to go.
You know.
Thank you, Tracy.
And he needs.
Yes. Joe needs to go.
He needs to go. I agree.
We're all in agreement.
Hi, Tracy.
That,
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hi, y'all. Did you see that email that I sent you, Bob, on the candidates being candy?
Oh, yeah, I shared that last night.
Oh, you did share it? Oh, my God. I mean, Uncle Joe, candy corn. He needs to go. And, you know, it's just, you know, and who did he equate to the circus peanuts? Where's Scott?
Oh, that was Amy Klobuchar.
Right.
Yes. That was beautiful. Like,
I mean, it's like you motherfuckers need to go. It's like, I'm tired. You know,
I mean, I like Cory Booker a lot. His personality, the way he talks.
Not going to make it.
Ain't got a chance. Got to go.
He got as much of a chance of really becoming president as I do. So, no.
I'm going to say the other thing.
What about Pete?
I desperately want to say goodbye to Mayor Pete.
Yes.
I want him, and I'm gay. I'm a lesbian. And I want him to go find another rainbow to go across, you know, just go to the other side of the rainbow. Just go on with your husband and just live your life, Mayor Pete. Because, I mean, I'm not saying that these people are worthless, but it's just they're exhausting.
I don't think I'm telling tales out of school. I hope I'm not. But I was talking to the one and only Tara Devlin. And, you know, Tara Buster is every Saturday night, and she's doing some a la carte
stuff.
Sometimes
Thursday night.
Yeah. But, again, Tara's a lesbian, and she said, don't care. The nerve of a 37-year-old guy thinking he's ready to be president because he's been mayor of a small town.
That part. It's like, dude, seriously, go away. It's the hubris. It's the, what is that? That privilege that is like, I'm tired. But, you know, just real quick, because you guys were talking about healthcare. And see, because of my income and my disability, you know, never thought I would be happy that I was, you know, bipolar and all that other bullshit. But I'm in California, and I get Medi-Medi. So I have Medicare and Medi-Cal.
So, good for you.
You know, like John said, I pay at the most for my medicine, and that's if I get name brand, $3 is the most.
Yeah.
Or most of the time it's free, that part, because and the only reason why I got Medi-Cal was because 7 years ago I had brain surgery, and they're like, dude, get the Medi-Cal, so it'll take the 20% away for your hospital. So when I had my brain surgery 7 years ago, it cost me, and that was because $1,000, because my doctor didn't normally take Medicare, and he did an exception. So it only cost me, and I was in the hospital for almost a week, and, you know, the private room, and because I had that good insurance, I had Medi-Medi. So, you know, those motherfuckers weren't going to let me go home. I had to say, I'm going home. I'm tired of the poking and the prodding and the other bullshit. But this program, this broke down bullshit system that we have, and listening to like what Bob goes through, what you going through, Darla, all this other shit, ain't right. And like you said, the Congress critters, not only are we footing the bill for their insurance, motherfuckers, we're paying their salary. So God damn it.
Exactly, and they take a lot of time off. Like, I was
stunned. Yeah.
I was stunned that they...
Every time I turn around, they're on vacation or some shit.
If they
have a business trip to a foreign country and they have to go. Yeah, right. I have to go to Tahiti. Yeah, that's it, Tahiti.
I gotta go to Tahiti.
If I took as much time off as Congress does, this radio program would not exist.
Well, you know, we all dream of having that Mr. Smith goes to Washington again. You know, that's what the country needs. Do we have it? I don't know. I have hope that somebody's going to stand up and change the world. But, you know, it's a pipe dream. Oh, by the way, I'm smoking my pipe, so no wonder I'm dreaming it. But it's a goal that you fight for. You know, at some point, that's why come I still hold on to that thought that can we impeach his ass if we force the Republicans in the center to face the morality of what they're doing, of their own integrity for supporting this man when it's obvious that the world can see it. Nixon didn't go until after those tapes came out. that was already on the floor and in the public. So I'm still holding out hope that that information.
I'm sorry, John.
I'm with you.
Squid to get a backbone. I'm sorry, John.
Well, it rises, I think, from the people. You know, I'm old. I remember Nixon. I remember the mood in the public. You know, that's how come I say it. The most powerful thing we have is a voice that won't yield. It's our voice. It's our voice.
I hope the people aren't complacent and you know, they pressure the Congress. You're right. And, you know, I don't know, but I think that it seems lost because of all the voter suppression and
The gerrymandering.
We can't operate from that as our point of departure.
We have to
fight as though our lives depend on it because they do. And before Sparky yells time, Bob, we're going to run over just a couple of minutes here because there's a couple more things that need to get out into the conversation.
Go ahead.
One, a cowbell for Tracy.
Always.
And that is courtesy of Jack in Shreveport. Pete needs to go to the other side of the rainbow. And just further evidence of how fucked up our system is. Ron in Raleigh says, my insulin is tier 3. I get it from Canada. It cost me $660 for 2 months. If I bought it here, it would be $600 a month.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it genuinely is. And I wanted to throw this out there because this just kind of wandered across my consciousness here in the last half hour of the program. We have an idea, courtesy of a quote from that mushmouth smartass Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana Stan. We have a roadmap for how the maggots in the Senate are going to deal with the Ukraine quid pro quo charge, because there are Republican senators saying, yeah, it's pretty clear he engaged in a quid pro quo. So now it's going to the long and the short of it is they're going to put Hunter Biden on trial in the Senate instead of Donald Trump.
Yeah, fuck that shit.
These are the words of John Kennedy. He honestly believes that there may have been corruption in Ukraine. Bullshit. Mm-hmm. He couldn't find Ukraine with both hands. And a GPS. And before he turns over $400 million of American taxpayer money, he's entitled to ask. The issue to be litigated is going to be, did the president have a good faith reason to believe that Hunter Biden may have been involved in corruption? And if I'm correct in my analysis, then there will be a lot of time spent on what Mr. Biden did for that money.
All deflection.
Boy, howdy shit. That's all I got. That's the same guy when Kavanaugh was up there, when it came time for him to ask. You know what he asked him? Do you believe in God, sir?
You believe in Jesus,
yes,
son.
Yes, I do. Okay, that's good enough for me. There you go.
Meanwhile, as to Uncle Joe, James in Illinois says he'll go away after he loses Iowa and New Hampshire and then gets a weak plurality in South Carolina. If he hangs on out of spite, he needs to get trounced in Nevada. If that doesn't do it, Super Tuesday should finish him.
Hey, Bob. Cowbell for Tracy for the party. It was
Cowbell for Tracy.
Oh, for Tracy's party. Absolutely.
Very, very. They worked very hard, she and Jan, and I really enjoyed myself.
Wonderful.
Oh, good.
Thank you,
Joe. That's wonderful.
And
darling, it's always good to hear you, darling. You're a great contributor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And a note to sort of wrap things up, courtesy of Lady B. Subject line, universal health care. The problem is the folks in their 60s and 70s who retired with pensions and whatnot are doing pretty good. As it is, Medicare is fully funded and works well enough. Doesn't cover everything, but it's nothing to sneeze at. But us Gen Xers and late boomers, we still have quite a few years before we can even look at Medicare. We're faced with lower-paying jobs and more expensive private plans. And we're now paying into a system you paid into, but we certainly aren't working the types of jobs that provided the retirement and benefits the 65 plus boomers are enjoying now. So it definitely is a case of I got mine, screw you. That attitude sucks for your kids and grandchildren. Times change, jobs are eliminated, and the rest have the potential to be automated. Not picking on boomers, but of course, you guys like your shit. The 50s through the 80s were a booming era, especially for white folks, so reap your benefits. But leaving the rest of us to muddle through because y'all don't want a tax hike is bullshit. The old ways are no more. We need universal health care. Take care of us, too. Otherwise, who'll wipe your asses in the nursing home your kids will send you to?
Exactly.
That man's smart.
That woman's that smart.
Man. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's Lady
B. Sorry, that what? I'm sorry. I got lost in it.
Awesome.
Excellent.
And the thing is, yeah, underneath it all, like I was saying earlier, is a dirty little secret. People assume that anybody who's on Medicaid is getting substandard care.
No, I love it. I love it, Bob. You know, I've got a little bit of experience with this because actually I've had it since way before I turned. I'm 66 now, fixing to turn 67 soon. But I've had Medicare shit since I was 50. Because when I was retired from the Army, I was medically retired, and that's the way my health insurance was handled. They said, here's your Medicare, and then you have your policy that you have, and
this is the intellectual disconnect that's going on, and it's economic, not scientific.
Yes.
And it's based on bigotry, not rationality. People, you can have two people sitting in the same waiting room. You can have two people sitting in the same waiting room going to the same doctor. One's got Medicaid. One's got for-profit insurance. And the one with for-profit insurance makes the assumption that the doctor is actually going to care more about them, going to give them better care because he's getting more money out of the for-profit insurance.
Hey, if that happens, you got to piss poor doctor.
But it's real.
Violent growths.
But
what I'm saying is, if it works for me, and that's exactly what I have, Medicare in a private policy, and it's a family policy. It's not the cheap one I could get by. I have a little bit better one that I pay for, but not near what y'all are talking about. Now, if that could be done for federal employees, you could take that same freaking system and apply it universally. Everybody, you're going to have Medicare, which is not free. You're going to pay a little bit for your Medicare. And then you're going to have a selection of plans that you can pay for according to what you need that are negotiated by the government, which gets me a cheaper plan.
Medicare without any gaps.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You know, it there's a bridge somewhere to get there. But we all have to fight for it because Lady B is right. If you're, I have young kids. I have a 28. Son of a bitch, I'm getting old. Anyway, I worry about them and what world they're facing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm in this fight for universal health care. Yeah.
Yes, John, ma'am? Every single civilized country on this planet has already done it.
Yes.
Yeah. The other 37 industrialized nations.
That's what is so frustrating is all you have to do is say, look, everybody else has got it and it works.
You know, this goes all the way back to, oh God, 1L, first semester of 1L, which for me would have been 1988. And
that's me too. Yeah.
And my torts professor, who was a curmudgeonly, crusty old Marine, said, and he smoked Marlboro Reds in class and put them out in the
good old days
in the chalk shelf by the blackboard.
Cool.
And he said, "Listen, anybody here want to tell me the three countries in the world where you don't want to get sick?"
Wow.
And of course, it's 1L first semester, and there are suddenly no one in the room has a hand.
And
he says, "All right, I'll tell you, bunch of cowards." Communist China, South Africa, and the United States of America. Let's all stand up and sing the national anthem.
Well, China and South Africa have health care now.
Right. That was the next point.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
That is.
And here we are.
And that's here so we. Boring. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I just got a note on Twitter from Eileen up in New York City. You know, this is just horrifying. She said, "I just had cataract surgery. I have Medicare plus a supplemental, and a prescribed eye drop was $126 copay, teeny little bottle."
There you go.
Oh, my God.
Holy crap.
And how often do you actually get an eye drop in your eye the first time around? It's really hard.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah.
Who is that guy that they threw in prison, the medical guy, Bob, guy that jacked the price up all of a sudden and nailed his ass?
Oh, Pharma Bro, Martin Scarelli.
That's the pharmaceutical. Every one of the pharmaceutical companies are just like him.
Yeah, let's quit pretending that Martin Shkreli was an exception and just acknowledge that he's the Joe goddamn Manchin rule.
The opioid cases they got going on right now. Jesus, they're drug dealers. You want to see where the drug war needs to be?
Yeah, yes. My attorney general is one of them. The reason Joe Manchin got reelected is because the guy running against him was a pill pusher. He was literally a lobbyist for the opioid companies that dumped enough opioids in West Virginia for every person here to have 1,000 of them.
All right, Bob. We could get on another show here. I'm just trying to help you out there. I know how it is.
Nope, I know.
You're over time anyway. It is wrangled up, buddy.
Yes, Marky.
I still want to be apologize for baby boomers with pensions.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think you have to apologize. I think it was just Lady B pointing out that, you know, Reagan came in, pensions went away.
Not mine.
Well,
yeah. I got mine from Uncle Sam.
The conversion from defined pension plans to 401ks and that silly horse shit where you have to gamble on the market.
Exactly.
That comes along, and unfortunately, Sparky, you know, your pension is as rare as hen's teeth. I mean,
no, it was existing before that, and it existed.
Yeah,
long
my wife's
after
got one.
That, and it's still going. There's not that many people in it, but nobody contributing to it now. But it's still funded,
right? And see, and the risk to that is, there's NCUA and FDIC, and then there's that pension guarantee agency. I can't remember who they are. When you get to that unfunded liability part of it, there's a lot of fucking can go down. There's a lot of unions. Several unions have taken it on the chin as a result of that. Hey, just a couple more things on the way out the door. Brother Deacon Asa, who pays a lot of attention to the audio quality of this program and tries to help me keep from clipping like a son of a gun, says, could you please ask Darlene what audio equipment she's using to come into the Skype group? Her audio is impeccable.
Oh, wow. That's great to know. Thank you.
You are crystal clear.
Awesome. I just got a new microphone and boom and pop filter. So I'm using the vernacular here. It's a Knox Gear pop filter, and it is a Audio Technica microphone.
Yeah, AT makes good stuff.
AT, yes, 2020 USB Plus.
And what's the name of it?
It's Audio Technica.
Technica.
Audio Technica.
And that's a good brand?
Oh, yeah, it's a great brand.
I've heard it's very good. It? And this is a USB one that connects directly into the iMac that I have. It's a USB port iMac in the back. So it's not the, what is it called? The XLR cable. It's not an XLR cable. Is that what it's called, Bob? I'm learning this
stuff.
Yeah,
the three-prong mic cable. No, that.
Correct. No, this is directly into the computer. It's a USB connection, and it's Audio Technica, but it's the AT, I think it's 2020 USB Plus.
Yeah, the audio is excellent. Really.
Thank you. That's good to know.
It is. You're coming in crystal clear.
Awesome.
I apologize on my part. My thing was that it was the microphone volume was all the way up, and it was like, oh, my God, that's the last thing you need up.
I'm using two pop filters too, though. There was one that came that like wraps around the microphone itself, and then the Knox pop filter, the big round thing. I just decided to use two of them together. So I don't know, maybe that's helping as well. But I have a shock mount with it too.
It's excellent.
Thank you.
Your audio is excellent.
Yes. Awesome.
Thank you. Wow.
One of our blue dots up in Massachusetts just sent me a picture. She's a property manager, and one of the properties that was just recently emptied out, there was a set of headphones, and she sent me a picture of it, and that's what they are, Audio Technica.
Yeah.
And she said, nobody claimed them, John. They're on the way. I'm going to send them to you. Maybe you can use them on the show.
Wow.
And I haven't, I haven't showed my son the picture because I don't know anything. Well, I know from Audio Technica to, but I know now.
Oh, I'm such a pathetic gear slut. It's terrible.
Oh, my son is too. If it wasn't for him, he sets up that mixer over there when I go on Skype. But when I'm on the show, he's sitting right over there in that chair.
Well, since we're talking tech for just a minute, I apologize to everybody for the moments when the program clips, because I sit here and I try to ride herd on my own mic and I try to ride herd on the group. But because everybody has a different kind of audio equipment,
yeah,
you cannot maintain consistent levels for love nor money.
Nope.
And so you gotta ride up, you gotta ride down. So, that's the cause of that, because we don't have a dedicated producer back here.
Get a son, that's what I do.
Oh, I got one.
I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for Travis, I wouldn't have a show. Well, he makes. We just went live, by the way, Bob, for the first time in 3 months. Maybe we were banned for 3 months for going live on YouTube, because we violated CNN's little shit. Yeah. And so we went live the other night. We had like 874, I think, was the top viewers, the account that we had, and it was the Blue Dot family came back on YouTube just tremendously, and.
I don't know if you know, but Ferg, my son, has been through, been to hell and back over the past 3 months, in particular in the last month of October. It's been horrible. But he's a brilliant little musician. He's not little. He's 6 feet tall and 177 pounds.
He's a wonderful guitarist.
That's where we're going, Flavio. So
talented.
One of the things I'm working on, just by way of giving him something to focus on and pour his energies into, he can compose his own music on guitar.
Oh, no shit. Now, Bob, this you're getting it's scary on me, buddy.
He can't write the first note, and he's entirely self-taught. But one of the things, because of the same stupid rules, because we're on different platforms, and if I play a fucking song, then it's you've been banned in 152 countries.
My son is always after me. Let me throw this out here, Bob. You just described my son. My son is heavily behind him on the set. There are two guitars behind him besides his ukulele, and he's got his keyboards right there. The drum set's outside in his shed. He's got like six guitars out there. He loves to write music. Most of his girlfriend plays the ocarina better than anybody I've ever heard. She's got like 20 different, and they're geeks.
Play it. I can't even spell it.
I can't even spell it. Yeah, she's wonderful on it. And that's what my kids do. That's, and besides being a techno geek, and he's in here running my show for me, you just described my son. So, they get together online.
So here's the upshot. One of the things I've been thinking about doing is not going to let him talk, but when we get to the point where he can come back home, it's that bad, John.
Sorry to hear that.
Flaming barbed wire hoops we have to jump through.
Yeah.
But when we get to that point, I'm thinking about trying to go out and get a half decent little acoustic guitar with a built-in preamp, so that he can plug into it and just plug it straight into one of the channels on the board, and he can provide music that such that we can tell all these platforms to
kiss your ass. My son has done that.
Yeah,
And that's the cool. And by the way, that voice thing comes because he came in here originally on my show just to work the board. I'm not going to talk that. I'm not going to talk. Oh, the shit. Are you shitting me? He's young and he's got opinions. And when we're especially on the Blue Dot Live, you know, when we have people in on the Discord and everybody's talking, he's got an opinion. Well, holy shit. Now he's got a following. Yeah, and the other night, Halloween night, he went out with friends, and that's one of our live nights. So I had control of everything, and he's gone. And next thing up in the chat, like, "Where's Travis? Where's Travis?" You know, it's like, okay, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm chopped liver. Hi,
I'm nothing shit. You know, but yeah, it so don't count out his voice because it comes naturally. Because when you're in that conversation, huh?
I think it would be an anchoring force for him too.
I think it would. I'm sorry, Flavio, what?
For what it's worth, have him cultivate music because that was one of the things that helped me through my depression in high school. I was tremendously depressed. And music, Bach, guitar, all that just made it happened for me, and it kept me from having those dark thoughts, you know, those Werther moments, you know, that you just think like you're the only, you know, you're the loneliest person in the world, and the music helped me overcome that. It helped me.
It's always helped him. So I was over in Beckley, and I was looking, and they offer everything at the same price you'd get off of online, but they set it up and everything, and it's better that way. And I saw that there's a series of Yamaha guitars out now that have not only a built-in pickup and preamp, but also some built-in effects. So, for instance,
I'll send you money for that, man. I'll send you money if you want.
I mean, it's really wild. The chorus that's built into it makes a 6-string guitar sound like a 12.
Boy, howdy, shit.
I'll contribute to it, man. If you want to set up a fundraiser, I'll contribute to it.
Same here. That sounds awesome. That would help.
Anytime music is involved, it's good for your kid, I think. You know, my kids have always been.
I haven't broken it to him yet because I got to get him home first.
Yeah, get him home.
But I think, if he's interested,
make
in
it
doing
your
it,
problem, yeah. Bob. Make it your problem. You know, because of the fact you can't, you're going to get copyright infringement. You know, I'm kicked off YouTube for 3 months for copyright shit. It's better if it, I got a problem. I got a problem. Maybe you can help me out with that and let him help you.
I give you credit there, John, because I notice you're getting in trouble all the time, but that's pretty cool. I think people like that.
I'm still banned on Facebook until November 7th.
I was wondering what happened. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. It's so on November 7th will be the first time we'll have all of the Blue Dot family back together live at one time, and I'm looking forward to that. But
that copyright infringement?
Yes, I on one of my live shows, I was broadcasting the debate that CNN had. It was a presidential debate. You're going to hit somebody for that? Just trying to broaden the audience. Include participation in the debate, and all of a sudden you're going to pop up with, "Oh, I'm robbing your money."
Kiss yeah, that's my. Ridiculous.
Shouldn't we the people?
No. That's why. No, Christopher. That's why I beat on this like I do. These are not debates. They're pageants put on by individual networks. That's why when one's on CNN, they're running other content on Fox and MSNBC. Yeah. And when there's one on MSNBC, they're running different content and won't talk about it until the next morning on CNN. These are profit vehicles. This is what happens when capitalism runs your politics, too.
Right down
and when the last factions are privatized, right? And that's what the parties are. They're privatized factions.
Yeah.
John, that wasn't immediate either, right? Because you got banned. Like, it didn't seem like did it happen right away when they banned you?
It happened during the middle of my show. In the middle of my show, it went black.
When you were airing the debate?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was airing the debate, but I had my Discord channel open, and all our Blue Dot
in there when we were discussing things as they were debating stuff, and all of a sudden, boom, the feed just went blank.
So the penalty up until November 7th, you said, happened right at that point in time.
Well, no. This is my YouTube ban. That happened during that debate, okay. And I just got off of it just this last week.
So the Facebook
The Facebook one really pisses me off, because here's what happened. I did one of my rants, uploaded it. Next thing I know, I get a notice from Facebook saying, you've violated our community standards on bullying and harassment. Unless you're talking about Donnie the Dick, I'm not harassing nobody. And I wrote back to Facebook. I challenged this. And so they wrote back to me and said, you're right. You did not violate our standards. We're sorry. You're back on the air. Except evidently somebody forgot to throw the switch. And then every time I try to go live, it still says till November 7th. And we put another notice in, you know, like, hey, what's the deal here? But it's just a mute point. They ain't talking to you.
Well, right. And the reason
to break up Facebook.
But the other reason that's happening is because there are little white wing maggot turds out there who make their lives doing this stuff. Yep. They got no life, so they go around trying to mute the opposition. And it's one reason why I have been hesitant to broadcast over any of these platforms on a live basis that is not directly controlled by someone I know. So
yeah, that's
you know,
after
we're not,
my,
we're,
my
we're,
son.
We're
As
not out
fact,
there.
I have two of them.
Yeah, we're not out there running video because we don't have the server capacity to run our own video. But it's a different thing with the head-on.live streamer and the White Rose streamer, because YouTube and Google and Twitter can't do a fucking thing. And there's value in that. But anyway, we got to get out of here. We're 30 minutes over, you guys. Thanks for not calling time on me, Sparky. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, Sparky. We love you.
Thank you, Sparky.
The gang hangs out afterwards. It's an after party if anybody wants to be here.
Okay, cool. Well, I got to start doing the upload and call Agnes and tell her good night. It has been a great conversation. Thanks to everybody who jumped in and conversed and participated. Thank you to all of you who keep this program on the air. Thank you so much to our subscribers and everybody who jumps in on an a la carte basis. Thank you to Patreon and to Patreon subscribers and PayPal. Thanks. And thanks to everybody who participates in the program in whatever manner you choose so to do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room, to Sparky in the extraordinary around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, moderating away. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend. We'll get you home soon, son.